All I'm saying is that if Atlanta jumps out to a big lead, it's over.
That Atlanta defense, they're just so fast. I don't see how Tom Brady's going to be able to put up more than 10 points.
And dangerously!
Sports.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Actually, mine kind of hurt a little bit. I don't know if we actually... I think we got into it last time. Like, I was rooting for Atlanta.
Yes.
So,
And
that,
I think
that was
I had
kind of painful.
Yeah, and I had mentioned that, like, really, if it was literally any other team but the Patriots, I would have been all in for Atlanta. And spoiler alert.
If you've been living under a rock in a third world country.
The Patriots completed the largest Super Bowl comeback in history.
In the first overtime game in Super Bowl history.
Yes. I believe it was also... was it the largest? It was definitely the largest comeback in...
It was the largest deficit comeback in playoff history.
I think it was like second half history or something like that. Because the Bills... Or not the Bills. It was. It was the Bills and the Oilers, the Frank Wright game. They came back from like 30 down or something like that. And that was in like the divisional round. It was pretty early in the playoffs. Nothing nearly as high stakes as
the
Super Bowl. I mean...
Yeah.
And that's two in a row. Like, not in a row, but the last two Brady Super Bowls. You know, the time before they were down 10 in the fourth quarter. Came back and beat Seattle.
Yeah, but that really pales in comparison to this one.
Yeah. And then they were like, well, for good measure, we'll just get 20. We'll spot them a 25-point lead. Why not?
Yeah. So, it's so funny because... I don't want to take anything away from what New England did.
Right.
Because they clearly came out with a fire and won the game.
Mm-hmm.
But I still feel like, man, did Atlanta choke.
But that was, I mean,
just put it into perspective, like, as much as their offense was just not moving at all in the second half, especially in the fourth quarter, that crazy throw, I mean, Julio Jones made like four insane catches, but the one that he made... Got them into field goal range. I mean, I remember watching. I was like, oh, he didn't catch that.
Right.
And then it was like, oh, my God, he did.
Yeah. And it was so clear. Just you didn't even need more replays. Like, the first replay, you saw, like, oh, my God, that is a catch.
Like, he did catch it. And then it's just like, they're right there. They're in field goal range. And then Ryan holds the ball too long, and there's the sack.
Uh-huh.
And then there's the holding penalty that backs them up. And then, like, they're out of field goal range.
Yeah.
That was literally the game.
That was.
Like, if they had just kicked a field goal there, if they had done nothing except... Incomplete pass, field goal. They won the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it would have been essentially... I mean, it was essentially impossible that they came back to begin with. So I guess it is tough to say because they did score with 50 seconds left. So maybe they could have onside kicked it or something and whatever. But
yeah,
like,
you never know.
The likelihood would have drastically been reduced.
Right.
And by the way, the likelihood was 0.4% at one point. And it would have been reduced even more.
Right.
So, I could not believe, like, first of all, when Julio made that catch, first thing I did, I looked at Panda and said, there it is, game's over, this sucks. They were coming back, but that seals it. You know, it was an 8-point game, in field goal range. I mean, it was on the long end of field goal range.
Bryant's pretty good this year.
Right, exactly. He was a good kicker, didn't really have any, I didn't feel like he was going to miss that kick.
Right.
They take the sack. I think, what? I literally, when he dropped back to pass, my first thought was, what? What is happening?
Yeah.
And they, you know, they get to him. He holds onto the ball too long. I mean, I saw he didn't have anywhere to go. They just, somehow the Patriots, they played. You know that they had a run defense going. Like, they were not expecting a pass. And they, you know, they reacted well to the fact that it was a pass. And I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. And that sack probably put them at the range of...
Probably right at the very range.
Like, it was just like, ooh, now it's a tough kick. Like, this could go either way. And then I think the pressure that put on them of, like, we have to get some yards on this play. We can't...
Yeah.
We can't not get yards. So that took them out of being able to do a running play. Because if they got no yards, then, like, the chances of the kick were drastically... You know, just dramatically lower than they were one play ago. Mm-hmm. And then they, you know, the linemen just, do what sometimes you do when you kind of
he was beat bad.
Oh yeah, he was
like when they turned into replay. I mean, he had him in a full chokehold. Yeah. He was buying. Yeah. You know, what I mean?
He's just like, no, Chris Long, no, don't do it.
Yeah, he did what he had to do for it to be a 10-yard replay of the down,
right?
Instead of a 12-yard loss
and fourth down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, because
it's kind of like that old saying in basketball about, you know, like if the guy is going to get a layup,
like make sure he doesn't score.
Yeah,
like if you're going to foul him,
if he's going to foul him, make sure that he doesn't actually score the bucket as well.
Yeah, yeah. So they make sure the holding made sure that, you know, he wasn't going to get that.
It gave him a chance.
Uh huh.
It's funny to think. It
was a pretty awful chance at that point.
Yeah,
and even still, then they were still up by 8. So the Patriots still had to come down, score a touchdown, and a 2-point conversion.
Yeah. But the number one thing that I'll say this, because I don't know if you would agree or disagree on this, again, because I'm looking at it more from a Atlanta standpoint and what went wrong,
mm-hmm.
is that I know that when they came out in the second half in New England, obviously they're working hard to stop the run.
Oh, for sure.
But man, they just gave up on that run in that fourth quarter. Like, once New England started coming back...
Oh, yeah.
They were like, three and out. Like,
mm-hmm.
The thing is about Atlanta's defense is that they're young.
Yeah.
And they have played extremely well in the playoffs.
Yes.
But I remember at some point in the third quarter, you know, because we were still marveling at the score differential at that point.
Yeah.
But they were showing it, and New England had run like 69 plays to Atlanta's 33 or something like that.
They had and like over doubled them. Yeah, no, it kept the same way of like, because Atlanta, the thing with Atlanta is the way that they play, their style offensively, they go for chunks. They go for these big chunks. And the thing is they hit it at a high enough percentage that they get the wins most often, or, you know, most of the time. But when you'll see a lot of three and outs because of that. The way the aggressive style that they play, it's real easy to get a three and out from them, but it's real hard to stop them from getting those chunks at some point.
Yeah.
And they did. They kept getting their chunks. It's just that's why New England's defense was the top rated scoring defense in the league, is that's that bend don't break thing. Mm-hmm. They would give up these big chunks, but they were just, you know, at least, I mean, really, they only they only gave up the couple, really a couple scores, because one score came off of the interception, another score, I mean, it came off the fumble return, they had to march it down, but, you know, they got, that puts you automatically in a disadvantaged position right off the bat, you know, but still. So I kind of don't count those two against the defense.
Right.
And I mean, so they held up pretty good against the high-powered offense.
Yeah, I mean, the score that Atlanta put up early on was more of a all-around score. Like, I mean, they were playing very well in
all phases of the game.
But you did see, even when they were up by that much, that differential in time of possession and number of plays run. And when they got to the fourth quarter and New England was starting their comeback, and they looked frazzled.
Yeah.
Like, okay, we've got to do something.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Shanahan just said, dump the running game.
Yep.
We've got to march down the field with Julio Jones. We've got to shove Julio Jones down their throat.
Yeah.
They got really lucky on two or three crazy Julio Jones catches.
Yeah. I mean,
because if not for those, that would have been even shorter drives.
There were two of his four catches first of all, I can't believe he only caught four passes. Like, it seemed like he caught 1,000.
Yeah.
Because, like, it seemed like every time the Falcons were on the field, which just turned out to be not that often, he was making a spectacular play.
Like, saving a drive.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I know he caught one over the middle that I still don't understand how Logan Ryan didn't intercept it. It was like, it was just one of those plays where
it was so crazy because
the bigger guy got it.
it's literally like, not only did I have to get this ball, but because there's a guy's arm in here, I've got to catch his arm too.
Yeah.
He's like, I have to come down with the ball and his arm or I'm going to lose it.
Yeah.
And he did.
And the thing was, is that, you know, learned with the Seattle Green Bay game, even though this was nowhere near as close as this, or that one, the Seattle Green Bay game was nowhere near as close as this was as far as the catch. But if they consider it 50-50 on who came down with it, the offense gets it. And so, now, Julio got that ball. I mean, no doubts about that. But even if Logan Ryan had been able to somehow, like, stay on the ball, It would have been Julio's. He wasn't taking that away from Julio. Wasn't going to happen.
House rules. Bigger man wins.
That's right. And then the catch on the sideline. I can't believe Matt Ryan even threw that. Like when they every time they showed that replay, Julio was not open. That was an interception waiting to happen. It just went. Was it Ryan on that one too? I think it might have been over his fingertips. He probably felt the wind of the ball on his fingertips, and just Julio magically comes down with it with the toe tap right in bounds. Right. I couldn't believe it. He was the most dominant player in the game.
And he didn't even get to touch the ball that much. It was what's crazy about it.
It kind of reminds me of far less touches than this game, but like when Terrell Owens, when he played for the Eagles during that Super Bowl against the Patriots, where Terrell Owens was clearly far and away the best player on the field that day. Julio Jones, I think, was the best player on the field during the Super Bowl.
I remember at some point looking at Amy, just when he made that catch, and my immediate thought was, you know what? He might not even score in this game.
Right.
And yet that catch right there, that saves them in field goal range. I think he deserves the MVP.
Yeah.
Because it's not about Ryan throwing him the ball, because Ryan's put it in terrible places.
Yeah.
He made a lot of really bad throws.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny to only think about four of them being Julio's, but three of those were probably throws that would have been interceptions with any other receiver.
Yeah, exactly. I think Julio probably sealed himself, like in my mind, he sealed his stature as the best receiver in the game.
Yeah.
Nothing against Antonio Brown. I really before these last two games that Julio played, I kind of leaned towards Antonio Brown. But after like the big game he put up in the conference championship, and then the big game he put up in the Super Bowl, I was like, no, it's Julio.
Yeah.
It's him, because he showed up.
Yeah, really, he really did.
Against the same defense that, I mean, they didn't really hold Antonio Brown in check, I mean, that much. Like, he did still have, like, 66 yards, I think, against the Patriots in the championship. But he wasn't a factor.
Right.
Whereas Julio Jones was a factor in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I would agree completely. It's stunning. Like, it's so hard to put into perspective what happened. You know, like, when you're watching that, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just one of those games that, as it just starts to snowball, you again just see, man, if Atlanta could have run a few more plays, particularly if they had run on a few plays, run some clock, just keep your defense on the sideline for a minute.
Just give them a breather. They were so gassed.
Yeah.
And like, as soon as they got a little gassed, like, you could tell. Well, and the Patriots, really, in the first half, they were moving the ball well. They just fumbled it once and threw a pick six once, and that point it looked like that, well, this is going to be the difference in the game, these two turnovers, because they were moving the ball, and it wasn't like Atlanta was playing poor defense, but you know, it's still another high powered offense they were playing against, you kind of expected it, except New England does it in a much more methodical manner than Atlanta does, where New England's like, we'll take 5 here, 6 here, 3 here, 5 here, you know, like that, and Atlanta's like, we'll take 20, 15, 30. Yeah. And that's how they do theirs.
Right.
And so, just a quick walkthrough. So, this blew my mind. I don't know. Have you seen the win probability graph?
I've seen it before, but not for this specific game. I haven't looked at it.
So, I'm just going to... The listeners can't see this, but you'll see it's right around 50-50 for the big chunk of the, you know, like probably through the first quarter and a little more. And then very quickly dips down to, I don't know if you see that, that's the 100% for sure line, to just over it. So Atlanta, for, it looks like a good third of the game at least, was 99% or greater, had a 99% probability of winning the game for at least a third of it. And they lost it.
So that's the thing that always comes back to me, is like, you always see when teams get out to big leads, they don't last, because at some point you start relaxing, you go into a lot of cover two, cover three, cover four even sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm just worried about not giving up the points to get back. And then all of a sudden we do have to do it, and we have no gas in the tank.
Yeah.
And I just remember when they scored the touchdown, And I was like, there's no way they're not going to get the two. I just know it.
Oh, then the last one?
Yeah, then they got the two, and I was like, well, this is all about
the coin
toss.
Yeah. Because you knew if you
the
just
second
knew
that New England won the toss, it was like, this game's over.
Yeah, like you knew. They had them. They had Atlanta.
It's like the defense has been on the field almost the entire second half. They're completely gassed, and they just lost the 50-50 probability coin flip.
Yeah.
That's going to put them right back out there. But they're done.
Yeah,
like,
I was seriously, it was one of those things where, so, as I follow this graph, so it's around 50-50 for a quarter and a half, probably. At that point in the game, I'm like, I'm watching the game, just, you know, like, oh, this is a good game. You know, it's 0-0 for the first quarter. Then Atlanta starts scoring in the second quarter and keeps scoring in the second quarter. And as that graph starts going closer and closer to 100% Atlanta, I'm just more anxiously drinking. And then it gets to that point where it's right around 100%. And I'm just drinking from sadness now. It's just depression. I'm just like, oh, how did it get this bad?
Yeah.
How? Because, you know, the Patriots had never won or lost the Super Bowl by more than 4 points, I believe. Every game, including this one, was within 6 points at the end. And I think this is the biggest blowout that there's been in a Patriots Super Bowl. That's what's nuts. Yeah. Or at least of the Brady-Belichick era. And so they're down 21-0 and then 28-3. And I'm just like, what is this?
Yeah.
How did this happen? I couldn't believe that a Tom Brady New England Patriots team that, while definitely shorthanded as far as they don't have Gronk, who is, in all reality, their only real scoring threat that, like, on any given play, could be a touchdown, you know? Everybody else is like, okay, come on, get us these 6 yards. Get us this 10 yards. Yeah. Like, nothing major. Like, Hogan will occasionally break out, and, you know, he had the great conference championship game, but Atlanta's defense is fast. I didn't expect him to have like a monster game because they were fast. It would, you know, like a guy like Gronk who could be big and there's just no covering him. Like, you can, even if you're covering him, much like Julio Jones, he's open.
Yeah.
So since I didn't have him, I'm just like, there's just no chance. Like, it's just over. It's just over. And the only thing, like, there's this, that thing in the back of my head that kept saying, but if anyone can do it, it's Tom Brady. So I guess I'll keep watching the game.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to stop watching it.
I know, because I was like, I mean, they got to put up a touchdown or something to look respectable, right? Like, it's got to be something. And so what do? They come down and they score a touchdown early in the third quarter.
And then dunk the crap out of an extra point. And it was so funny because, like, I was sitting in the room with, like, four people. And then, like, as soon as it happened, three was like, doink!
Yeah. But I just hung my head low. I was like, this is this game. This is how this game goes. Like, they get one thing, and of course
the crazy probability of, like, them missing that and then having to get two-point conversions.
Yeah.
Like, it makes you sick to your stomach if you were rooting for Atlanta.
And you know what? This is one of those games where I know, I feel like a lot of people, first of all, I'm going to take off my New England Patriots hat because I'm getting warm.
What a jerk.
It's a beautiful hat, though. I'm just going to sit it there. I feel like a lot of times, because Brady gets calls for, like, getting hit, like, just like a lot of the big marquee quarterbacks, you know, and Aaron Rodgers or Drew Brees, they're going to get some calls that Matt Ryan probably won't get, but he might next year.
You know what I will say is, going back to the Atlanta Green Bay game, there was one really bad slide that Rodgers tried to do, which, like, I think I even talked about this. Like, I hate when guys try to, like, bait penalties.
Yes.
And they picked up the flag. Did you see that one?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They're like, no. No way. Yeah. But anyways, go ahead.
But yeah, so I thought, in all honesty, that, you know, and not with, like, being completely objective on this, the officiating went against the Patriots the majority of the game. Like, there were different, you know, like, the blocked extra point that Atlanta got to get back that was completely wrong, like, where they threw a flag because they said they were lined up over the center for the extra point, and they weren't, like, at all. Yeah. Like, it wasn't even, it really wasn't even close. He just, when he jumped diagonally and went over the center, but he wasn't lined up over him. And Belichick, I don't know if you saw him lose his mind at the ref on the sideline, because it was it Van Noy, I think it was?
Yeah. For sure.
And he was just like, he was over the bleeping guard! The bleeping guard! And you could just see, like, he just losing his mind. He was so
mad. The thing that I thought was the funniest is that, like, there's the dumb penalty, so they get to re-kick it, and it's much closer. Is that, like, Van Noy just didn't even move. He just stood
there. Yeah, he's just like, screw this. Point.
I've already done this.
Yeah. and at that point, he knew the center would raise up quick enough to... Because the whole thing is, if you touch the center when you jump over them, then it's a flag. But if you get over the center, then it's good. Like... And I think they'll probably outlaw that this coming year because a lot of teams started doing that.
It's an odd thing. Yeah. You know? And I understand why they're doing it because now the extra point is so much further away.
Right.
And there's a better chance of blocking because of the angle.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the whole extra point thing is crazy in the first place, and we might get to that later.
But in any case, there was that, and there was another call. It was a... there were a couple of... I know people were upset at, like, there were three Atlanta Falcons defensive holdings in a row on third down that were blatant holds. Like, I don't know why people were... I saw people on Twitter getting mad at that. And I was like, I don't know if you guys are watching the game, but when you literally just grab a guy and turn him, like, that's a hold. Like, that's how that works. You can't do that.
Yeah. Like, it's just people getting angry because that's third down.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, like, that was the Bengals' entire season, by the way. And it was always Pac-Man, but that's not
true. And you're watching the replay hoping that you have something to be mad at, like, against the refs, and then you see, oh, no, Pac-Man just grabbed him for, okay, why not, I guess.
Yeah.
But that's what was happening. And then there were a few of them where, like, right in the, there were first downs that got on, like, Patriots drives, like, they were throwing for first downs that they got killed because the receiver got held again. I think the refs were probably eating their flag a bit because they felt like they were throwing a lot of holds. And there were a couple times, I mean, I saw Edelman just completely get turned and still almost make the catch, like, once or twice. And it was like, okay, like, you, the refs are watching this, right? But whatever. And so I just kind of, I didn't feel like it was enough to turn the game sort of thing, but I did, like, kind of, seems, the refs are... not making calls that that favor the Patriots. It seemed to favor the Falcons more. But that was, you know, whatever. I that wasn't going to be a point of contention for me. Like, if the Patriots lost, it was going to be like, they weren't so egregious, like, that we hadn't seen those in other games. Like, it happens.
You don't think there was a Goodell saying, I mean, I really don't want to hand Brady a trophy if you guys want to do something about it.
Part of me probably thought that for a minute, but, like, that there, you know, I don't think I could have gone that far down the conspiracy theory rabbit hole.
But people will.
Yeah, people will. But I did love, on Twitter especially, there were all sorts of memes coming around, like, when it was around that 99% mark for that the Falcons were going to win, where it was like, I can't wait to see Goodell hand Brady that trophy, and then, like, one of those gifts where they turn around like, okay. There were some pretty good ones where, like, yeah, too bad about that. And then as it started to, the Patriots started climbing back in it, I literally just went on a freeze. I put down away every device. I couldn't, because I just couldn't deal. I couldn't do anything more than watch the game. And so it was, man, that was something else. Do you want to, should we describe the game? I imagine everyone kind of saw it, like, you know, so I don't think we need to necessarily recap every score or anything like that.
I don't know if I want to relive it, really. No, I'm just kidding.
The one thing I'll say about, like, the scoring is that I can't believe that. So the Falcons scored with 8:31 left in the third quarter and didn't score again. And that, I can't believe that happened. Like, can't believe that then the Patriots went 31 unanswered.
It's honestly, again, I keep looking back at the play calling and it's like, It's funny because I always feel like when you see situations like this, because if you remember, I was talking about this before, and we did it on the podcast or I was outside of a podcast, but that's kind of a gripe that I've always had about Bobby Petrino, is that he tends to lay the wood and then lay down.
Gotcha.
And the 1 year, because, you know, we all know how this year ended. The 1 year, because this is also a gap between him being there and him not being there and him being back. But
right.
The 1 year that we had a shot at playing for the national championship, when teams were, when the media was actually looking at Louisville and saying, man, they might have a chance.
Right.
The only loss we had was to Rutgers. And in that game, the play calling and everything just died. It's like, we're going to make no attempt.
Yeah.
And so I didn't feel that from Atlanta. Like, I felt like they're like, no, we're going to go for it.
Uh-huh.
But they had no conservative will at all. It was like, we're not going to do anything about running clock, keeping our defense off the field. We're going to chuck the ball and try to get long down the field first downs on every play.
Mm-hmm.
And like...
Now, there's part of me, though, that also looks at it as, well, that's kind of the horse they rode in on. Is like,
I can't disagree. I mean, you don't want to change your identity.
Yeah.
But
at the same time.
For a quarter?
Yeah.
For a quarter to win a world championship?
Oh, believe me. Like,
if I'm sitting on a 25-point lead,
mm-hmm.
Yes, there's every bit of me that's like, that number doesn't feel safe.
Yeah.
But at the same time.
Obviously it wasn't.
Right. But at the same time, there's something that feels safer about chewing up clock.
Just as much clock as you can, yeah?
Yeah.
I hear you. I mean, it's tough to disagree with that. Like, it's one of those things where I think if they had done that and tried to chew up a lot of clock, the Patriots seemed ready for that. And they would have still chewed up a lot of clock, and it would have been much tougher for the Patriots to come back. Although I don't know that it would have been impossible. Based off of just the way that the flow of the game went, once the Patriots would get the ball, they seemed to just—I mean, they were just scoring. They were
well. And the bottom line is, when you're moving the ball that way,
mm-hmm.
For Atlanta, if you're trying to run the ball to run more clock, you get a lot less yardage and you flip field position.
Yeah.
So if you try three runs and you lose 3 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Versus if you try three passes and maybe you pick up 7.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, it is.
So, I mean, there's give and take there, but at the same time, like, it just felt like there was no awareness of the situation.
I agree. Like, I can't. So while I can, you know, be devil's advocate and say, you know, this was the horse they rode in on, and understand that, like, this is the game that they play. Now, it was more pass heavy than it usually is, but when they just feel like they need to air it out, you know, they've been no stranger to just being like, okay, let's throw it 60 times. Like, that's the kind of
game
they'll
play. The funniest
thing
about it is, it's like, while they're still airing it out,
mm-hmm.
there's still so few pass attempts and completions to Julio.
Yeah.
It's like, you've seen the crazy catches that he's made.
Yeah.
It's like, if you're going to just, all we're going to do is gut it out and try to go down the field.
Mm-hmm.
Give it to your target that's not stoppable.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, I know. It's tough. Like, I...
It's like we said, 3 of those passes probably should have been interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
So, maybe Matt Ryan is saying, yeah, that one's probably not a good one. Yeah. I don't know how I determined that this one is.
Yeah.
And that one wasn't, but like...
Because, mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, you know, the Patriots, everybody's thing is to take away the best player, you know, try to take away your best, but like, the Patriots do it better than everyone else does. Like, they actually will take that person and make them not a factor in a game. But Julio's just too good. He's like, no, I will be a factor in this game. So, I don't know. Do you have any more about the actual game itself?
As far as the actual game itself, I was going to make a segue topic, because it's not about the actual game, but as far as the actual presentation.
Yes. That's where I was going next.
So, why have commercials been horrible for like 3 years?
I don't know.
It's just like they've given up on them.
What has happened?
I don't know.
I think it's been probably, yeah, a solid 3 year lull in Super Bowl commercials. I don't even know why. I guess I don't know if I was someone else like that, I would watch the Super Bowl for the commercials anymore. Like, if that's the only reason to watch it, like,
if there was two teams playing, I could care less and I don't want to see it. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't watch it. Sad to say. I mean, unless there's like some amazing halftime performance.
Right. The Lady Gaga one, that was pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily my genre of music, like, that I typically seek out, but man, that was a show.
The two big things about her halftime performance to me, number one is that, like, I mean, I know that we've had a couple of artists recently kind of segue back a little bit, but they usually still scale them back by bringing in like 16 other artists to make them do these little cameos.
Right.
So it was a straight her show.
Yeah, which surprised me. I was like, oh, wow. I kept waiting for the cameo.
And the other random person to show up to, like, why are you even here?
Yeah.
Like, Red Hot Chili Peppers again? Like, you guys are still alive? No. And then the age, you know.
Yeah.
Like, that demographic of who's performing in the Super Bowl, like,
yeah.
Are we finally back to normal?
Like, yeah,
we're we finally like, all right, we know.
We got, because was it Beyonce last year? Was that last year?
It was last year, the year before. No, last year was Coldplay.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And the year before that was Beyonce.
Yeah. So I.
But it's like Coldplay. It's like, I know that they're a huge band
right.
in the world,
uh-huh.
but like, it's this mellow style of music that most people get into. Like, yeah. I know they have a couple of songs that are different, but for the most part, it's like,
yeah,
that's your halftime show.
Dad rock.
Like, go to yeah, it's nap time. It's like the lullaby music.
But yeah, so I mean, they're
go to sleep.
They're slowly moving themselves. You know, I guess they were kind of moving themselves towards and now they're like Lady Gaga. And you're like, whoa, this is what Super Bowl halftime shows used to be. What we expected mm-hmm. them to be, like just this massive spectacle, where you're just like, whoa, okay, that's a performance. I mean,
and it was kind of needed, just because even though it ended up being a great game by the end,
right?
It was not feeling like a great game at
that point.
The time.
It was a boring game. Like, yeah. It was like, ugh.
So, yeah.
Maybe that sparked the Patriots. They're like, just that residual energy. They grabbed hold of it.
Tom was walking on the field. Want my Super Bowl. So let's get to the other, let's get these topics out of the way, because I feel like they're short conversations.
Yes.
But Brady, greatest of all time.
I don't even know that it's a conversation anymore. Like, it, after that comeback, it, and it's not just, you know, a 25 point comeback is great, but a 25 point comeback in the Super Bowl. And of course he had to have tons of help. Like, I get that, and the Falcons had to mess up. Like, they had to do things wrong, but
again, they make one non-mistake, kick their field goal, then
4-3. Yeah, and it's just one of those things where, like, I don't know how many quarterbacks could have stayed composed to the point where you go down and do 31 unanswered points in the second half of a Super Bowl. Like, and that started, it was the first point for the Patriots in the second half, even. Like, it didn't even come early.
It was like, 4 or 5 minutes left in the third quarter?
2 minutes left in the third quarter.
Yeah.
2 minutes and 6 seconds. So really, in the span of 17 minutes of gameplay, like, they come back from 28-3. In 17 minutes of gameplay. I mean, that's nuts.
Yeah.
That's insane. Like, how do you not? And I know, you know, and Brady took some chances, and he got lucky a couple times that, like, I mean, where.
But Matt Ryan did too.
Yeah, Matt Ryan did too. And sometimes the ball bounces your way, Edelman.
Okay, so that was the other topic that I had actually forgotten about. So I want to know your honest-to-goodness take on finally having a Super Bowl miracle catch
I
go your way.
Yeah. Well, because it looked like the miracle catch was going to go not our way. Just like the Seattle game, right? Because there was, okay, in Seattle, the way it went, just a quick recap, was there was a pass that was so well defensed by Malcolm Butler, and that clearly was going to be a drop, and it just happened to bounce up off, it was like a Patriots player's leg or something, right? Mm-hmm. And landed right in the Seattle receiver, I think it was Curse.
I think it was Curse.
He was on the ground, it landed right on him, and he caught it. And it was like a 40-some yard gain, like miracle, like what? And then it ended with Malcolm Butler's miracle interception.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much miracle that is, he just read the play well. But like still, like it was just one of those things where like, what? Oh, how did...
Yeah.
Like you didn't believe that it happened.
I just remember like, that was the second, like the Jones catch on the sideline, and then that one, I was like,
yeah,
that wasn't a catch.
Yeah.
And then they replay it, and it's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Like, every Super Bowl that they're in...
there's a miracle catch that goes against them. Yeah, as soon as Jones caught that, I said the same thing. I went, oh, that wasn't a catch. He was out. And then they showed the replay, and it was just immediately obvious. Oh, how did he make that catch?
Skills.
Like, first of all, how is it not intercepted? Second of all, I mean, it was just like, Matt Ryan threw... I mean, that was the dumbest, but the most precise pass of, like, probably the whole game that he threw.
Yeah.
I would say 99 times out of 100, absolutely, positively, do not throw that pass. That was the one. He got it. I mean, just, it couldn't have been.
Never do it again.
Right, exactly. And he makes that catch, and my thought is, another one? Like, another one. Another one. Yeah. And then, yeah. And then there's the tip up in the air, and it goes, and Edelman makes that catch, and my first thought was, there's no way that didn't hit the ground. Like, there's just no way. It's so funny
when they zoom in on it, you see his hands under it,
uh-huh.
And he's got it, and then for good measure, he, like, pops it up and then catches it again. He's like, is that a catch? Yes. Double catch. Double points.
And you know what? I don't know if you noticed, it hit a Falcons player's arm.
Yeah.
And bounced up.
Mm-hmm.
If the Falcons player didn't reach in to try to get it, it would have hit the ground. But because, you know, I mean, how do you... Of course he's going to try to reach in and intercept that pass. Like, what, are you not going to try to intercept it?
Right.
And it just happened, like, I couldn't believe it. When it happened, that's when I think I knew the Patriots won. Like, because it was on the last drive. It was when they were coming down for their last touchdown, 2-point conversion in the fourth quarter. And I didn't know I don't think I had much at that point. Like, it felt pretty good, but at the same time, it was like, I mean, it's still a tall order to go score a touchdown and get a 2-point conversion, as we saw in the Denver game last year with the Patriots. That's how they lost. They missed the 2-point conversion.
Yep.
And so, like, the whole time I'm thinking, they're going to rip my heart out. This is what's going to happen. They're going to score the touchdown and they're going to miss the 2-point conversion.
And it's going to be a bad onside kick.
Yeah.
And it's just Sanu's going to get it again.
Right. I just felt like it felt good, like, but also like felt like it's likely still the Patriots are going to lose. And then Edelman made that catch, and then everything changed. Because it's like, oh, something went our way. Like, this doesn't happen. This doesn't happen. So clearly there's some magic in the air. The Patriots are going to win this. Like, that's at the point where I really thought, like, I think we're going to win. I think it's going to happen.
I love how you even whispered it to yourself the first time.
I couldn't even say it to Panda during the game. Like, I couldn't say, like, we might win. Like, when they got the ball back, actually the only thing I said was, I just can't believe we even have a chance. I just can't believe there's even a chance. And that's the only thing I could say about the game. Like, I couldn't talk. I just... hands on my head for like a whole quarter, just not believing anything that's happening. And there was that Edelman catch. That might be, has there been, I mean, that's like David Tyree. It was David Tyree ridiculous.
Yeah, heartbreaking.
I think the Tyree one would still be above it, which just hurts to say.
Just because of the insanity of it, like, on the head, like...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the image of it, like, I think is a bigger... Yeah. Like, it's just going to be more it's going to lasting memory of that, like the stuck, like clearly there was stucco on his helmet. I don't understand how it happened. And the, but the Edelman catch still is like, there's no way he called it. And then the replay, what? He really called it?
Jinkies!
Yeah, that was unbelievable.
So,
and my first thought, actually, so I know we're still on the game now. After he caught that, there was only a few seconds left before the 2-minute warning, and Dan Quinn threw the challenge flag. And I thought that was insane that he threw the challenge flag, because, I mean, just one look at the replay and it was obvious that it was a catch. It wasn't even like on the fence, like hoping for it to be overturned. Like it was, oh no, they're going to confirm that it was a catch when they do this review.
That timeout could have been everything.
That timeout could have been everything.
That could have at least been a breath now, for the defense.
Right. Now, the one thing I will say, though, is when my first thought when he threw that challenge flag and it was obvious that it wasn't going to go the Falcons' way was, wow, they just gave the Patriots another play before the 2-minute warning? That seems dumb.
Yeah, true.
Turns out they didn't need it because they scored with 50 seconds left. Like, so the, as far as the Patriots getting down the field, it was a non-factor. Actually, the Patriots, I mean, they were taking their time at the line because it seemed like they were trying to limit.
Well, especially at that point because Atlanta was out of timeouts.
Right.
So it was like, we just got to get down there and score.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to take too much time because we have to make sure that we score.
Right, exactly.
But let's not give them any.
I mean, and you know, leaving them 50 seconds still seemed like a lot, but because there weren't any timeouts, it felt pretty good that, like, they can hold up for 50 seconds of game time and not let the Falcons get down and score. But, that wasn't a sure thing either. Like, even without timeouts, like, I was worried about those Falcons. But it just seemed like it's destiny now. Like, at that point, it was like, they just can't. The Falcons aren't going to score. This is it. And it all came down to the coin toss. Yeah.
It was like, I was I really hope Atlanta wins the coin toss so they can at least have a chance.
Right. Because there was,
to salvage what has happened.
Yeah, it was obvious. There was no chance if the Patriots won the coin toss.
And as soon as they won the coin toss, I was like, that's it.
That is it. I was starting to walk to the bathroom when they were doing the coin toss, and so I stopped. It's like, okay, wait a minute. I got to know. I gotta know now. I'm not gonna wait and find out when I come back from the bathroom. And as soon as it went the Patriots away, I was like, I was jumping up and down. I was like, I can't believe it. This is real. I can't believe this is
like,
real.
What happened? Like, we won the coin toss. won the coin toss.
Like, why? What?
Like, have you been watching the game? There's no way the Falcons can't stop them.
Did you see the video of Chris Evans? Like Chris Evans, Captain America, he was at the Super Bowl and he's a big Patriots fan. And like when James White scored the game winning touchdown, Oh my God, he lost his mind. It's amazing. I'll have to show that to you later.
Yeah, we'll check that out.
Seeing Captain America, just fan out. Like, I mean, like, think of all the crazy fans and how they would behave like once they found out, once this game happened. Like, that's what Chris Evans did. It was awesome.
Nice.
Nice. So I think we're to post game now, right?
Post game.
Oh, it was so beautiful. It was so beautiful.
Like, I think at this point, I think I'm just going to sit back and let you soliloquy your thoughts, feelings, and impressions about the post game.
So, do you guys remember the most overblown story in sports history? They called it Deflategate.
Johnny Manziel.
Actually, fair point. Okay.
Hey, I gotta redeem myself and get some kind of commentary in here. Right?
The most overblown story about a relevant team in sports history.
Point receded.
So
conceded.
This is it's encapped so nicely. So Deflategate started when the Patriots blew out the Colts, right? Like, it had started at halftime when the Patriots were just kind of up on the Colts, and then they blew them out after all this deflated football talk happened, and they did it with, obviously, properly inflated footballs. And the actual science, with actual scientists, still say that they, I mean, the deflated ones were within the range of what we'd expect based on the temperature. But anyway, that became no longer the point when, with the suspension of Tom Brady for four games in the 2015 season. It was the point of does the NFL have the right to level that sort of a suspension on the suspicion of deflated footballs?
Basically, equipment negligence or whatever you want to call it.
Right, which I believe the penalty for that is like a $25,000 fine for equipment tampering or something like that. Mm-hmm. Which, if you suppose that they really did deflate the footballs, it sure seems like that fits the equipment tampering penalty, but the courts, in the end, the courts decided that Roger Goodell had every right to decide that it applies to a different penalty, that it's basically steroids. Okay. And so Tom Brady gets to play the whole 2015 season. They don't win the Super Bowl. But because it was in the judicial process, he got to play the whole season. And in the offseason, it was ruled that Tom Brady had to serve his four-game suspension. And instead of taking it to the Supreme Court, which would have been supremely ridiculous, like, he didn't just say, all right, I'm taking my medicine. He did finally just say, this is getting ridiculous. And well, it had gotten ridiculous. I mean, at that point, it was a year and a half in that when it finally ended. So I sit out four games. They go 3-1.
Which is ridiculous, by the way.
That, I still can't believe they did that. Now, to be fair, they also played pretty low-level teams in the league. One that we thought was going to be much higher in the Arizona Cardinals. Yeah. We'll get to that later.
Yeah.
So they go 3-1 against pretty subpar competition. Although the one was a 19-0 blowout by the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah,
shows you
at home.
Shows you that there's a big difference between having Brady and not having Brady.
Yeah. So then he gets a preseason warm-up game with Cleveland.
Yeah, so then he gets a warm-up game against Cleveland where they blow them out, of course, because it's Cleveland. And they proceed to, from the time Brady came back, they go 14-1. Like, so once Brady came back, after those four games, they won the next 12 games in the regular season. Well, 11 of the 12 games in the regular season. Then they win three playoff games. 14-1 to win the Super Bowl in the greatest comeback in the history of Super Bowls. And Roger Goodell has to give the Lombardi Trophy over to the Patriots. It could have only been sweeter if he had to specifically hand it to Brady. That would have been the only way it could have been sweeter. Did you see? There was the sheepish little handshake before he went up on the stage that Goodell gave Brady, where it was just like, hey, if you could just hear it, you're just like, it was like, congratulations, Tom. And Tom just turns, shakes his hand, and then everybody turns away, and like it didn't happen. Like, just like, okay, we did the business thing we have to do. We're done.
Yeah.
Goodell goes up, and the booze. The delicious booze. Yes. They were dessert, man.
Oh,
that
man.
Was the dessert.
Like, that was the best adjective.
You couldn't hear Goodell over the booze. I genuinely couldn't make out what he was saying the first time around. I was like, I can't hear him. This is so great. I can't hear a word he's saying. And then he hands the trophy over to Robert Kraft, and the boos turn into a massive eruption of cheers. And I don't. So that tells me, first of all, that wasn't just Patriots fans. That was football fans.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it was a win for the whole NFL. Like, as much as every other team hates the Patriots, or at least almost every other team probably hates the Patriots, everyone hates Goodell just a little bit more.
I don't know if your characterization of a little is accurate.
You might be right. It might be a lot more.
I think in general, football fans don't like the Patriots, unless they're obviously from the area,
right,
or a fan. But I think the football fans hate Roger Goodell.
Yeah. I think that's universal.
Yeah. I don't think that there's a more loathed sports primary figure in any sport.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whether it's a hated player.
Yep.
Definitely not amongst the owners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really didn't care for David Stern by the end of his reign.
Right.
As much as good as he did for the NBA, like,
and he did
some
of
the decisions
good.
That he did made at the end, like, the whole blocking of the trade for Chris Paul to the Lakers.
That was...
It was so unbelievably shady.
Can you believe... I know it's
what the Lakers have become.
Yeah. Like,
versus
that killed
what
the
Clippers are now.
That killed the Lakers.
That literally killed their franchise.
I can't believe it. It's so nuts.
Oh, and it's like, you know, we can't have all the players on one team, like... That's what the NBA is right now.
Yeah.
You just prevented one team from being allowed
uh-huh.
to do it.
Yeah.
All those other teams already.
By the way, it's one of your premier franchises. How are you yeah. doing that?
And you literally like, killed them.
Yep. But anyway, football.
Anyways, back to Roger Goodell.
You see it at the draft every year.
Mm-hmm.
He gets booed with every pick that he announces. Which is just, how does he?
You know what's really funny is, like, I know that, like, in the NBA, they've always done that thing where the commissioner announced the first round.
Uh-huh.
Then they bring the deputy commissioner to do the second round.
Yeah.
You know, in the NFL, they kind of let Goodell, let the commissioner do, like, the first few rounds. Like, they usually let him do the primetime.
Yeah.
And then, you know, once they got to day two, which now it's a weird three-day thing. But,
yeah.
Then they would let, you know,
like
a deputy
kinda...
commissioner or somebody else. But, yeah. You know, like, the last, like, 4 years now, there's been, like, as soon as they hit the second round, they're like, all right, we're going to bring in...
Like
somebody from
person.
Our team.
Yeah.
He's like, so now it's this pick, and they're booing him. It's a guy from your team.
Like, oh,
he gets,
okay,
he runs
yeah.
off the stage.
Yeah, like,
so that Barry Sanders could announce the pick. Yeah, or...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I don't know how he goes up there and just eats it. Like, just every time he comes to a microphone where there's fans around, like, if it's not just reporters, if it's fans, like, I'm surprised the reporters aren't booing him. But, but if there's any fans...
There's a couple that are.
Yeah.
There's a couple that are.
If there's any fans in the crowd, he's getting booed.
Oh, yeah.
And so to watch him eat it, like, just the ultimate of just eating it. Like, he had to hand the trophy over, and then he bolted. I mean, did you see how quickly he was off that, like, he's like, here's the trophy, and bye. I feel like he always stays, like, a little bit
yeah.
during those, like, hangs
pulled
out.
Harry Potter apparate right
yeah,
there.
He's
like,
see
gone.
Ya. And on his way down, he also shook Brady's hand one more time, which was another one of those, like, oh, yeah, congratulations, MVP, bye.
Peace out.
Yeah.
Have a good offseason.
Yeah.
Giselle's on.
So, it was so sweet. It was my dessert.
Oh, man. So, another year in the books.
Another year in the books.
Another Super Bowl finally completed.
Mm-hmm. It was, I think, all in all, a really good NFL season. It started, I think, really slow.
Oh, the funny thing is not only did it seem to kind of start slow, but...
Mm-hmm.
The ratings really reflected that. Like,
yeah.
Remember the beginning of the season, we were talking about, is football dying? Because it
right.
seems like people are just tuning off.
Mm-hmm.
And then Brady's 4-game suspension ended.
You know, it wasn't, like, exactly then, but it was a little bit after that.
Yeah.
When, yeah, like, probably around midseason, like, the ratings really started picking up, and like it seemed like everyone was paying attention again. And I guess maybe that's kind of like... Maybe the thing is that it has... waned in popularity a little bit because of things like what Goodell has done to this
what
league.
What Goodell's done. And all the, not just what Goodell's done, but what the league itself has
right.
done. Because, like, I think I've said this on podcast before, but if I haven't, then, like, I love football.
Yeah.
And yet I hate the NFL.
Yep.
Like, not the teams and the games and
right,
the playing,
the entity.
Like, the entity of the NFL. Like, they truly are an evil organization.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there's no way around it. Like, they really are. Like,
uh-huh.
They're
like, hey, can we get away with not paying these people who we know that they're, like, giving themselves lifelong mental disabilities?
Mm-hmm.
We know that it's happening, and we're going to tell them it's not? Not even just, like, I mean, we're just going, no, everything's good. Dude.
No, like, that doesn't
research,
exist. That's
yeah.
not a thing.
Yeah, that's not a thing.
Really?
What are you guys talking about? We've done the research. It's good.
Yeah.
Like, can we see the research? No.
What research? I mean, no, our research. Yeah, let me go in the back. I don't think he's coming back.
Don't worry, guys. Dale's in the back like, don't worry, they'll forget. They got all the head injuries.
Wow. And the sad thing is, like, I do really feel like as much as that was, it was a nice little joke. Like,
yeah.
That's really how I picture the NFL.
I mean, a little bit.
It really is.
A little bit.
So, but anyways, it's just funny because whether you buy into the, like, fans generally, like, taking some time off from the league.
Right.
Versus, like, I will say that Goodell has tried his hardest to just oversaturate us with NFL.
For sure.
And, again, I love football.
Mm-hmm.
I hate some of the things that they're doing. But I'm still going to watch it again next year.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, how can you not?
Well, because you're going to be like defending champions.
How can I not?
And sure. I'm going to be like top 10 draft pick. But I digress.
Well, so, I was going to say, we'll get to it, but I still think things are overall looking up for the Bengals.
So it's funny because when we talk about being Super Bowl champion versus being a top 10 drafting team,
mm-hmm.
it all comes down to things going or not going exactly how you thought they would.
That's right.
Ah, horrible segue to our looking back at our preseason predictions.
Absolutely.
So first question for you is, obviously there's 32 teams in the league, right?
Yes.
So out of 64 record predictions, so both of us went through every team.
Gotcha. I'm with you.
How many do you think that we accurately predicted? Like to the score, to the letter.
Out of a total of 64?
Out of 64.
You know, I bet we got decently close. I'm going to say, and by decently close, I mean like not necessarily zero, but I'm going to say we got 20.
You think we got 20 spot on?
Yeah.
You're setting the over under at 20?
Yes.
Two. So in terms of being exactly spot on... We both got one.
I just flipped the O and the 2 there, you know? Yeah. It's 0-2, not 2-0, my bad.
That, yeah, that happens sometimes when you're...
Wow! Wow!
Now, granted, like, you can still be within a couple of games. It's not like it's that big of a deal.
Yeah, yeah.
But as far as picking spot on, we both predicted exactly one team exactly right.
Who was right. it? Do you know?
All right, so to get to that, we're actually going to go to the tape a little bit. So, for Bob... It might help if I click the right thing, right?
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
We got some clips for you guys.
Yeah, we're new to this.
I have the Colts and Jaguars both at 8-8.
So obviously it wasn't the Jaguars.
Nope, not the Jaguars.
The team that you predicted correctly was the Colts.
Yep.
Going 8-8, well done there. And then the only one that I predicted correctly... So I did predict Tampa to go 9-7. Actually, you predicted them 8-8, so it wasn't like we were that far off.
Right.
But a lot of times we were in that, like, kind of in the ballpark.
Uh-huh.
But in terms of being actually on it.
Only two.
Yeah, two.
That's nuts.
Two. That is it.
I would like to, I'm not going to do this just because of the work it would take, but I would like to see, like, the variance on, like, how many games off we were and things like that. Like, to
oh,
get
sure.
an idea of how close.
Yeah, well, I have these here.
I was going to say, I felt like it went mostly as we expected with a few outliers.
Yeah, like, pretty much, I will say this. The AFC Ooh. West, we predicted every team within two games.
Did we?
So.
Well, I guess that was probably easy to do because we knew they were all good.
Yeah, they were all good, and we knew San Diego wasn't good. So
right.
It was really just a matter of being off or less off with San Diego.
Right.
So, to give you the quick overall rundown of some numbers here. In terms of who picked the most games the closest.
Uh-huh.
So I looked and said any games that are, like, we predicted the record within two games,
uh-huh.
plus or minus.
Makes sense.
I did better.
Gotcha.
I got 17.
Okay.
You got 16. So you're talking, like, super close.
Yeah, so not that big deal. That is probably where my 20-ish came from. So, like, yeah. I felt like we were pretty on.
Like, we were in the ballpark.
I did not know we were.
With half the teams in the league, right?
Yeah.
So... Then I also looked at the other outlier and said, who picked by five or more games off, right?
I see a lot of fives on mine.
So you had five teams in which you were off by five games or more.
Wow.
and I had 6. So I was closer and farther away at the same time.
That's nuts.
Yeah. So, obviously, our biggest successes we both talked about already. You did pick the Colts spot on at 8-8, and I picked the Tampa spot on at 9-7.
Right.
Which leads me into our bad picks. So I'm going to kind of go gloss over a couple of them, because I want to segue straight into my really bad one.
Yes.
Because it's a doozy.
So, and the funny thing is that, you know, if you had asked me a week ago that the Cowboys are the runaway winner of this terrible division, like everybody else is going to be sub .500 and the Cowboys are going to be like 12-4. And then Romo goes down, and then it's like, you know what? We were really hyping them up, and their defense is still god awful.
Yeah.
Why do we think Romo alone was going to get them to 12 wins? Because he doesn't usually.
I think the Cowboys will win the division at 8-8.
That's the thing that I hate about picking this division, because we're going to look at this at the end of the year, and we're going to be like, oh my god,
did every one of these teams I could see being as low as 4 or 5 wins.
Yeah. So the funny thing is for me is that I had the Giants at 9-7. And I basically have everybody else at 6-10.
So I picked Dallas to go 6-10.
Wow.
You did pick them to go 8-8, so I was off by a couple more games than you were to make that.
Yeah, I was still off quite worse. A bit.
Yeah, so the other ones that we picked really bad, you were off on the Falcons. So your biggest miss period was 6 games.
Gotcha.
You missed by 6 games on the Panthers and the Super Bowl Falcons.
Right.
I was off by 7 games.
On the Falcons?
On the Falcons and the Cowboys.
Oh, yeah. So on the Cowboys, too. Wow.
So we, in both of our worst instances, we did do it twice. But the funniest thing is getting into our conversations about the Falcons.
Our records.
I think the Falcons, Saints, and Bucks will all be between 6-9 wins. I think the Saints and Falcons both wind up with 6 wins.
Is you think that New Orleans is going to bottom out? I think that New Orleans and Atlanta are both going to bottom out.
Yeah,
I haven't seen anything to think Atlanta's going to be good.
I don't think either of them get any better.
The only difference between what you have and what I have is I don't have them getting as many wins as you do.
Really? You have them at what?
I have them both at 4.
4? Wow.
I have them both at 4-12. And the problem and the thing that does is that just gives Carolina and Tampa Bay is more winning.
The more I'm looking at it, so now I'm looking more heavily into their very specific game. No, I think I have the Saints at 5 wins. The Falcons.
I feel like the ceiling for Atlanta.
I think they're at 5 wins too.
Is 6.
So, the Super Bowl contender and like dominant team for 3 quarters, basically. We both ragged on in the preseason.
That's nuts. So. You know, here is the thing with the Falcons that we just didn't know was going to be the case. Their defense was okay this year.
Their defense was okay.
Their offense was exactly what we expected. Because it's been that way for years now. They've been a high-powered offense with a defense. And the same thing with the Cowboys for both of us. So this is the biggest difference between these two teams is their defenses showed up this year. They weren't great.
They really weren't.
Neither were great.
Neither were great.
But they did enough for
their offenses to be good.
Exactly.
So it's just funny because we also talked a lot in the podcast about how with the injuries that happened in the NFC, we felt like if the NFC found a way to win the Super Bowl, then it was a great year for the NFC because it seemed like the AFC was heads and tails above everybody else.
Absolutely.
So then you get to talking about like who are going to be the best players. And we all know who won the MVP.
The question that I have for you is this. So we're looking and we're more or less in agreement that we feel like Atlanta is clearly a sub .500 team.
Yeah.
Is Matt Ryan done in Atlanta?
I definitely don't think he's done overall.
Right. I mean, someone's going to definitely pick him up. I mean, he definitely has. He has the talent. He's been very inconsistent, but then, you know, they've never had a defense, and the offensive line's been suspect here and there.
He's had to play Drew Brees. You know, that's the thing, is I felt like he has had to play Drew Brees before he could get to be Drew Brees.
Right.
Yeah, so right there you heard it first, folks. We picked the MVP before the season started.
That's right.
I mean, at some point in there, it sounded like we were basically writing him off, and I was like, well, who's going to pick him up next year?
Uh-huh. Oh, my gosh.
That's the MVP of the league.
That's amazing. That is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It, you know, and the things that we called out, though, I think you called them out, was the offensive line and the defense. They fixed both of those things this year.
Yeah, I mean, that was the only team in the NFL that had the same offensive line group start every game.
Yeah. And they played more games than most of the league, yeah, because they made it to the Super Bowl.
Well, I mean, their center was playing the Super Bowl with a broken leg.
Yeah, and as we saw...
Sorry, a fractured fibula.
Yeah, that probably wound up being part of why they lost. Because, he got bull rushed. And but anyway, yeah, so that's nuts. That's
funny because... We talk about joint failure and joint success.
Yes.
Our biggest joint success was the Colts because I had them at 7-9, I think.
Let's see. Yeah, 7-9.
Yeah, I had them at 7-9. So we were together, we were only off on that game by one.
Mm-hmm.
And the team that we were off by the most were the Falcons.
Yeah.
We combined to be 13 games off on their record. So.
I see we were both also off by just one game each with the Bills. We both had them at 8-8, and they went 7-9.
Yeah.
To be fair, they fired their coach early. They probably would have went 8-8.
Yeah, I mean, they should have won that last game.
Yeah.
The whole benching of the quarterback and
they
everything was fishy. Like it's just that's
oh bad. That
man. Just looked ugly.
Oh, that's a franchise that I mean, do you really want to play for them? Like,
right.
Who would want to play for them?
Right. So then, playoff predictions.
Playoffs.
Playoffs. We're gonna do that every single time. So get used to it. In the AFC, you accurately predicted 3 of the 6 playoff teams.
Okay, that sounds about right.
And you also accurately predicted 3 of the 6 NFC playoff teams.
It's always like, what do they say, about 6 team turnover every year?
Sounds about right.
That makes sense to me.
I have the tiniest edge. I did get 4 of the 6 AFC teams.
Oh, nice.
And then, again, 3 of the 6 NFC teams.
Okay.
So, it's funny because... in the preseason episode, we had a lot of back and forth about the AFC West. And the funny thing is that we both ended up very much in the same ballpark with that division in terms of like where teams fell.
Yeah, we were
the difference was is that I put more stock in the Raiders,
mm-hmm,
and you put more stock in the Chiefs.
Right, and we put the same amount in the Broncos, it looks like.
Yeah, and so the Broncos are the one that let us down, and I actually got the extra playoff team because of the Raiders.
Gotcha. So. And you know, yeah, and they were one game difference. For between those three, we had one game difference. And yeah, the Broncos, I still am surprised that the Broncos didn't make it. Like they were one of those teams where the ball just didn't bounce their way a couple times because they were, I mean, when you watch them play, they were clearly one of the best teams in the league. You know, and they still had an elite defense. And their offense was fine. And like that was basically, you know, they actually, I think their offense was better this year than it was last year. And their defense was probably a little less, like they weren't quite as good this year. But their defense was still, I mean, I don't think it's that unfair to say they were still the top 2 or 3 defenses in the league.
Yeah. And I think that it was just a matter of not being able to put up the points offensively.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like when your defense is that good. And you're just so unsettled on the offensive side. Not only not having quarterback continuity by losing both of the guys that they really were operating with last year, then letting one of the running backs go.
Yep.
Like, there was just enough there to contend with that just made them not cohesive.
Yes.
I guess is the best way to put it. And the funny thing is, it's another clip that I should have pulled from the prediction podcast, is that, you know, you kind of talked about how consistently every year there seems to be this one team that just blows everybody away defensively.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like everybody figures them out before the next year.
Yeah.
And it's actually funny because Denver wasn't totally that way. Their defense was still really good.
Mm-hmm.
But the team that was Carolina.
Yeah.
It's funny because you really talked about that, about how, you know, yeah, that really good defense, usually somebody figures them out.
Mm-hmm.
And you even talked about that with Carolina and how... They're obviously not going to be 15-1.
Right.
But we both went into that 12-4 range for them.
I think that's what we both predicted, even.
Yeah.
12-4? Oh, you had 11-5.
11-5, but man, their defense really did not bring it this year.
No, they didn't at all. And I mean, their offense also didn't bring it very well either. But
right,
like, I think that was a full team letdown. It seemed like they just really, I mean, I can't believe how poorly they played. They were, maybe it's already one of the plans for the podcast, but who do you think was the biggest shocker this year for, like, how poorly they played? For me, it was the Panthers and Cardinals are neck and neck.
I almost feel like it's the quote unquote hierarchy of the NFC from the previous season.
Yeah.
Because we saw Atlanta turn around, and it's funny because going back to the Super Bowl just for a brief second, you know, we always talk about how, you know, we don't have faith in Atlanta until they prove they're not going to fall apart.
Mm-hmm. They did. I mean, I don't think
they didn't in the season, but they kind of did in the one game that mattered.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is like the Super Bowl was the first time I felt like they weren't going to fall apart.
And they let you down.
And they let me down. Yeah. Well, they let me down in the best way.
but yeah, like I guess going back to our preseason predictions, we both had New England over Arizona.
We got the Super Bowl pick, right?
Both got the winner. But that opponent, and you know, it's the terrible thing to say is that we look at what Arizona did the year before,
mm-hmm.
and they played so well, and yet there wasn't anything about that team that on paper made you think they're going to be great.
Yeah.
They won a decent amount of games.
Mm-hmm.
They had some good comeback wins. They had that battle with Green Bay where,
right.
you know, you're talking about the Hail Mary that's going to bring Green Bay back, and then Larry Fitzgerald shuts the door. You know, uh-huh. like, no, it's not happening. But I feel like coming into the season, like, yeah, they lost a couple more games
mm-hmm.
than probably they should have.
Yeah.
Maybe then, I mean, definitely more than I thought they would.
For sure.
But didn't it feel like, isn't this really more like who this team is? Like, what about this? The way that they played in 2015 made me think that they were going to be a 13-win team in 2016.
Well, for me, I still think they've got a good chance next year because
and Palmer did say he's coming back.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah, that Palmer is officially coming back. I don't know that necessarily makes me think it.
You know what's funny is like a we'll get this minute. Go ahead.
Yeah, but you know he is a good quarterback without a doubt. He is a good quarterback, and he can occasionally be elite.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that about Carson Palmer. They have
he's got the skill set. He just doesn't necessarily have the athleticism anymore.
Right. So. They have one of the best two or three running backs in the league. You know, with David Johnson.
David Johnson is really underrated.
I
after watching him this year.
Yeah, exactly. Watching this year, I realized, like, oh, wow, I was really underrating David Johnson. And I think it only took, like, one or two games. And I was like, wow, two things are apparent. David Johnson is way better than I thought he was. And the Cardinals are way worse than I thought they were.
Yeah. Yeah, he carried them for for their not as many wins as I thought they were going to have.
Uh-huh.
He carried them. And it's like, wow, I really did not. And the funny thing is, I remember, because he went down for a couple of games.
Right.
And when he came back, I was playing his owner in fantasy football
mm-hmm.
that week. And they predicted him to score like 30-something points. And I was like, no, like that's such an overreaction. He dropped 31 on me. Like, really?
Like, come on, man.
Like, ugh.
Yeah, he was.
Okay, yeah, he's good.
he was a beast, man. And their defense, actually, I think statistically, they were still second in the league. So they were still, you know, as good as advertised.
They're one of those defenses that they're almost deceptively good because there's not necessarily that every few positions a guy that you just know, like, oh, that's a great defender.
Mm-hmm.
Like most teams that have those vaunted defenses that everybody's like, oh, they're so good.
Mm-hmm.
They've got like five starters that you can immediately like, oh, yeah, that guy and that guy and that guy. Those are Pro Bowlers every year. And, you know, for them, it's like Patrick Peterson.
Mm-hmm. And they did gain Chandler Jones, who played well this year, too. And, like,
not necessarily what they were hoping for,
right.
in terms of numbers,
but
also a lot of double teams and
exactly.
creating pressure in ways that don't show in the stat column.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you draw a double team, that means someone else isn't getting that double team who previously would have been.
Yeah.
And then so their numbers might inflate a little bit. That's one of the craziest things about this Patriots team for this year. There were three things happened this year to this Patriots team that made me think that, like, really lowered the odds, I thought, on them winning the Super Bowl. They started off with dealing Chandler Jones. It blew my mind. I could not understand it. I could not understand dealing Chandler Jones. And turned out their defense was just fine. They were number one scoring defense in the league and got better as the year went on. Mm-hmm. Then they deal Jamie Collins, probably the best young defender, like from a linebacker, outside line, probably the best young outside linebacker in the league. Like, I mean, really, he can cover. He's big enough and fast enough to cover like a Gronkowski type tight end. I mean, you know, as best as one can, but like, he's going to be like the best at doing it. And he's great at getting, at the pass rush. Like, he actually played really well for the Browns.
He really did.
Turns out the Browns are just awful.
Yeah. But well, they did re-sign him already, though.
Yeah. I guess, why wouldn't you? Right. I mean, he's great.
But it's just one of those deals that you almost felt like New England was thinking, let's get what we can for him now.
Yeah.
Because he's going to want more money than we can really pay him.
And then that's exactly what they thought.
Not going to have enough to entice him to stay. I'm like, well, right. They do have money because they don't have any other roster.
Right.
I digress. Sorry.
That's exactly what I thought. I was like, they... You know, so between both of them, they were like, well, we're not going to have the money to sign these guys back, so let's just get something for them. But my whole thought was, you're going for a Super Bowl this year. Just get the Super Bowl. And then you, sure, you don't get anything for them, but, like, you get a Super Bowl.
See, but that's why your team is always in the hunt there, because
yeah.
They don't think about just the Super Bowl. They're like, we have some guys here. Like, if there was some point where they said that if we lose this guy, we're going to lose everything we've got, mm-hmm. they wouldn't get rid of him.
Right.
They deal guys strategically based on,
do we have people who can fill in well enough?
Yes.
To keep us.
So that they're always a step ahead for next year.
Yep. And, like, and
that's great organ management.
You know? And they did. And then the other thing, and again, it's just more these like kind of moves that were kind of not vaunted, you know, like no one was like praising the Patriots for so many of these moves that they were making, but they made enough moves to keep a really good defense strong. Like they got Kyle Van Noy, I think in the middle of the season from the Lions. That proved huge because he basically played like Jamie Collins the last handful of games. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe it. And then I still think, and I think I predicted this before the season, maybe the thing that saved them was getting Martellus Bennett.
Yeah.
Because
especially in the beginning of the year, he was a beast.
Yeah, he's a great blocking tight end. He's a great receiving tight end, and he's a great unselfish tight end. Like he plays, he knows he's a tight end. Not he doesn't think of himself as a receiver who lines up next to the tackle. Mm-hmm. You know, like a Jimmy Graham. Like he will play the tight end position just like Gronk. And when Gronk went down, that's why I was like, well, there's the season. That's it. And it's like, no,
that's
Marty
like, oh,
is good enough.
That's
to,
why
like,
we did that.
Yeah, and it worked out perfectly. And even though Martellus was hurt a bit, and he kind of was, from a receiving perspective, a non-factor in a lot of the games, like kind of down the stretch, it was because they were asking him to do a different thing. And the different things he did great. And
he did it for a ring.
So all three of those things, I thought, yeah, those are going to kill it. But they do those things, you know, and I wonder if Arizona, speaking of which, if they have been doing those things enough. Because they do have this great defense lined up. I don't know. Have they re-signed Chandler Jones? Do you know if they've extended his contract? I think they might have during the season, actually. In any case, they definitely have a solid, awesome defense. Their offense, I mean, Larry Fitzgerald is getting really old. They lost Michael Floyd. Understandably why. Carson Palmer is probably not the most reliable.
Yeah, I mean, and you hate to say it, but like, in terms of his injury history,
yeah,
and his age, he's ancient for the NFL.
Yeah, exactly. Like the two combined.
Yeah, like neither one by themselves is enough, mm-hmm. but the two together, like, he does not have history on his side.
Right, because it's like Ben Roethlisberger is getting near that as well, where you kind of wonder, like, oh. Like when he said he might retirement is among the possibilities he'd be considering. At first, you thought with Roethlisberger, like that's nuts. And then you think about all the times he's been hurt. You think, well,
yeah,
he isn't young.
He's not a spring chicken.
Yeah, and he's hurt every year for a few games. Like, so you kind of start to see, I mean, he's got two rings? And he's played in at least one or two more.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about it. He's one of those guys, too, where, like, man, I mean, those cleats are probably getting hung up in a year or two.
Like, it feels like he's not going to happen this year.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, is it going to be your question?
No.
Okay. Like, it doesn't feel like it's going to happen this year, but it feels like this could be the last one, maybe.
I agree. Like, if he doesn't, like, make it all 16 games this year, if he gets hurt, you know, for two or three games this year, I think this is the last time. I think this will be the last year for Roethlisberger.
Anyway.
I was going to say, how nuts is it that both Ben Roethlisberger and Carson Palmer may retire before Tom Brady? They're both younger.
Yeah.
And they are both significantly less healthy and less viable.
What year was Brady's draft?
2000.
2000.
Yep.
Oh. Carson Palmer was the first pick of 2003.
Yep.
And
Roethlisberger was what?
Roethlisberger was
2 years later? Was he 5 or 6, wasn't it? 2005 or 2006? Was he in the same draft? He wasn't in the same. No, yeah, he was with Eli and Phillip Rivers, right?
Yes.
I think that was 06. Maybe. Maybe it was 05. I don't know.
Speaking of which, killing time for a minute.
We're going to look up that for you guys.
2004.
Oh, wow.
Round one, pick 11. For some reason, I was like, it was the next year. I was like, no, it wasn't the next year. But I guess it was.
I thought it was later than that.
NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year, 2004.
Didn't he take them to the Super Bowl? Or was it the next year?
No, they went to the playoffs.
That's right. It was that surprising thing where, like, oh, look at the rookie.
Yeah.
And then the next year was like, look at the champion.
So, the last real questions, I guess. Looking forward to next season.
Mm-hmm.
First things first, I need your way too early Super Bowl prediction for next season.
Oh, man. This is incredibly tough because, like, I'm like trying to project.
We haven't gone through free agency. We haven't gone through the draft. Other guys might still retire.
Ooh, I hear you. Okay, so man, this is tough. All right, let me just look real quick at this list. I think the Packers finally make it back. They looked good enough at the end of the year once they started getting people healthy again. That it reminded me why they just always seem to make the playoffs. It was like, oh yeah, that's why. That's why. When they're healthy, they're so good.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, let's just, I'm going to say they actually are healthy at the right time and they're going to make it. If they can fix some things. The NFC has been a surprise.
Conference well, we picked last couple we years. Picked so many of these divisions to be so bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny how wrong we were. Because to go back into some overall numbers from our predictions, because I don't think I ever actually said it,
mm-hmm.
We both were actually off by a total of 41.5 games in the AFC.
Uh-huh.
And then I was off 3 more games in the NFC than you were. You were off by 45.5, and I was off by 48.5. So we were much better picking the AFC.
Right.
And then overall, that you were off by a grand total of 87 games, and I was off by a grand total of 90 games.
Nice.
So, it sounds so much worse when you're talking about big totals, but
all right, I know, because it's like 32 teams, and it snowballs pretty quickly.
Right.
But, man, you know what, though? Actually, I'm taking back my Packers pick. Cowboys will be back. And see, I want to say the Steelers, but I have a hard time with health. They struggle staying healthy.
Yeah.
But they do get Martavis Bryant back. Add Martavis Bryant back to that mix. I mean, you just take a guy that, I mean, he can take the top off of defense better than probably anybody else in the NFL. I mean, he's right up there at least. Like, he's in the top 5 at being able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So if he could just put down the pipe, like, just leave the Jets. Like, I mean, I listen, Martavis, I get it. It doesn't make sense. There are states that have it legal, and you just can't even, you can't, like, just don't be stupid enough to get caught. Like, they actually kind of tell you everything you need to know to not get caught. Come on, dude. Like, just stay in. Like, you're so fun to watch. So, I'm going to make the bold prediction that somehow he's able to go the full year without getting suspended.
No, that's bold.
Tells that, you know, and that Le'Veon Bell will also go the full year without getting suspended.
And Ben Roethlisberger.
It will stay healthy enough.
Play at least 12 games.
And that they will make it to the Super Bowl. So I'm picking Steelers, Cowboys, you know, the Super type Bowl of matchup rematch that we never see ever, right?
Yeah. So what's funny is because I keep looking down the list of teams and thinking, like, I want to be bold, but I don't want to do something that's going to look absolutely completely idiotic.
Right.
But the thing is, if somebody gets hurt, it can make a good pick be idiotic before it's all said and done.
Absolutely.
The immediate thought that came to my mind is Cowboys Raiders.
Man,
wouldn't that be a fun Super Bowl?
That would be.
Only if the Raiders won, though.
Right.
Because I hate the Cowboys.
I'm with you. I want to see those Raiders, man.
What's funny is because my first thought, for some reason, was Giants Steelers, and I was like, no.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
Man, those Giants, I don't know what happened to them in the playoffs. Like, they looked like they should have been, like, they should have been the guys, but I mean, we're not.
And you're like, thank you, Lord Jesus, that
no
the Giants didn't
kidding.
Get to the Super Bowl.
I don't know if you saw in the pregame, like, they were doing the
Edelman
red carpet.
Edelman would have went for that catch, and all of a sudden, it would have been on Tyree's helmet.
I know, some headlines. Now starting
his
safety.
His head gets under there, like, flat, and then pulls it up. Anyways.
Oh, man. But in the red carpet thing for the Super Bowl, Mark Wahlberg was talking to, is it Connor Manning? One of Peyton and Eli's brothers. And he was just like, thank goodness your brother didn't make it here, so we have a chance to win, Mark Wahlberg said. And it was great. Like I told you, that was the thing I was the most scared of everything. I was like, the Giants are going to wind up beating them in the Super Bowl again.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
it didn't come to pass.
Yeah,
every
really...
time Brady plays anyone who's not the Giants in the Super Bowl, he wins. 5 out of 7. I mean, numbers are in his favor.
Yeah. So, I guess the other conversation that's going to come up for me.
Yes.
Just, you know, because we're all diehard in this room. I need the 10-step plan to make the Bengals contenders again.
Make the Bengals contenders again. Let's see. Number one is don't panic. I think that's the first step the Bengals need to take is, like, just don't panic.
Go all Ford Prefect on me right now.
Yeah, they're not exactly. They're not as far off as their record this year indicated.
I'm nervous, though, because I don't have a towel with me.
Yeah. It's okay. You got time. Get a towel. 6-9-1.
The funny thing is that they actually had a really good shot at finishing with a non-losing record.
Yeah.
They had a really good shot to go 8-7-1.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just the end of the year, you could just see.
It just got away from them. Mm-hmm. They just, you could tell they just, mm-hmm. they knew the season was what it was at this point.
Yeah.
And, like, really, to them, what's the difference between 6-9-1 and out of the playoffs and 8-7-1 and out of the playoffs?
Right. Yeah.
Although, that would have gotten them in. No, it would not have.
Not in the AFC.
I took it back.
It would have in the NFC.
Gotcha.
Well, no, it wouldn't have.
No, they would have been out either way. Okay.
Because the Lions went 9-7.
That's right.
Anywho. So.
Step one, don't panic. Step two. The thing that killed you guys this year was the thing that I said was likely to. Was Pac-Man Jones. I mean, that defense has slipped a lot, and their best players are the ones who kill you the most. Like, who kill them, like, shoot you guys in the, your mm-hmm. own team in the foot the most. And that I think is actually, of a personnel thing, that's the thing that needs to change the most. Now, it's also probably the toughest thing to change.
Oh, yeah.
Because you kind of, I mean, replacing a star defensive player without someone already lined up is tough. Like, you know, the Patriots certainly took a step back when they didn't pursue Revis really in, like, not super hardcore in his last free agency period, mm-hmm. and they kept Butler, and, like, that was their main guy, and they let go of Bolden, Brandon Bolden. Wait, not Bolden. What's his name? Browner.
Browner.
Yeah, and they let him go. Browner. But to be fair, also, he was one of those guys who would shoot you in the foot.
I think he was, like, the most penalized person in the secondary in the NFL for, like, three seasons.
Yeah, so, like, if you were going to have him, you needed a guy like Revis to be, like, the okay, he'll make up for it. Like, we get it. You're a good player, but you also, like, you can't be the best player because you're too undisciplined.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing, I think, that if the Bengals fix that, and almost literally just that, I think that suddenly spins around to they're back to 11, 12, 13 win season. But that's also, like I said, probably the most difficult thing to fix. You know, you got to bring it, you either... Because, I mean, did it seem like... I didn't feel like they had anybody that was like that next guy on the now, roster.
So the biggest problem, just throwing the two names out there, are Jones and Burfict.
Yeah.
Because there may not be a better sideline linebacker in the NFL right now than what Burfict can do when he's playing within the lines of the field.
Exactly.
And the whistle and, you know, the snap and the whistle and all that. Jones... He's the only corner that we have at this point as a reliable starter.
Yeah.
And yet, it's every third down is, oh, defensive hold, 5 yards, automatic first down. Like, so much for getting off the field.
Exactly. So it's like, it's tough to replace his talent. And so you're kind of leery to, like, to replace him with someone with, so, like, because there's... I mean, you know, there just aren't going to be that many people out there on the market that have his kind of talent. But at the same time, maybe you can get someone with less talent with the extra discipline that makes up for it.
Yeah, that's true. Because the other thing that goes into the situation for Cincinnati is, to put it bluntly, I'm stalling for time because I had something and I lost it.
That's understandable.
No, but the biggest problem Cincinnati has had is that they've done so well at building through the draft.
Yes.
Like, they've done this, they've had this mentality since 2003 when Marvin Lewis got there, that we are going to stockpile some picks, we're going to draft players, we're going to coach them up into our system, and they find guys that fit their system, and they play extremely well. And it works really, really well, up to the point that some of those guys don't pan out.
Yeah.
Like, I really feel like this season for them was sort of the ultimate culmination of all those things happening at the same time.
I think so too.
Like, you lost two receivers, you lost Reggie Nelson, who I felt like he was the glue on the defense.
Yeah, I agree.
And the same time that the two corners that we've drafted early in the first round to try to become guys, neither one of them, I mean, Kirkpatrick is a starter at this point.
Yeah.
But
he's not like, he's not a shutdown corner kind of guy.
No, he's not what Leon Hall and Jonathan Joseph were when we had those two corners.
Exactly.
And Denard has not really made it off of special teams yet.
Mm-hmm.
He played more nickel this year than he has because he had to.
Yeah.
From depth. And then we drafted William Jackson III, who tore a pec in the preseason and didn't play all year.
Right. So him coming back, I mean.
But at the same time, Denard got hurt his rookie season. Mm-hmm. And that lack of a season stunned him.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm worried that now we're going to be looking at Kirkpatrick, who hasn't really gone to an elite level starter yet. And two other first-round corners that we've taken since him that have both stunted on growth.
You know, and it's really... Ugh. I think it's... The tough thing is, too, is like... So, like, if I go back to the Malcolm Butler replacing Darrell Revis. Like I said, clearly, he's not Darrell Revis, and he's never going to be... There's never going to be, like, Butler Island. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But...
Sounds like a bad summer camp.
Yeah. But, like, he got that chance to succeed in the spotlight.
Yeah.
That gave him that. I think that interception, the confidence that gave him was everything.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't like he was a bad corner or anything before that. He was, I mean, he was a good corner.
He was a serviceable corner.
But he was, you know, he's a rookie. He's like, okay, we think this guy's going to be good. But then, like, you get that, and you just get that little extra confidence boost, the kind of confidence boost that's like, listen, you're not the best player on the team. You're not the best corner on the team, at least at that moment. But, kid, you just, like,
you proved your worth.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that was all the difference. And the Bengals guys haven't had a chance to really do that. You know, the sad thing is,
like, I thought that moment happened for Kirkpatrick. The game 2 years ago where Denver came in and we played them prime time and he picked him off twice.
Yeah.
Picked off Peyton Manning twice.
Yeah.
And I was like, see, I think that he just earned the confidence.
Right.
And then, like, this year it just
didn't last.
But, you know.
Maybe it helped, too, with Butler, that it was the Super Bowl. It was, like not necessarily just that it was the Super Bowl, but that there weren't any games right after that. Like, so he just left with that confidence and got to train with that confidence and got to go through preseason with that confidence. And, like, I think that was the biggest difference in the world for them.
Yeah.
But,
I mean,
they need
the
a guy
last
like,
play, like, you know,
exactly
the highest of highs. Yeah.
They need a guy though, who with like a similar level of skill, at least to like Malcolm Butler, who I know he's like top tier cornerbacks in the NFL, but like not like the top of the top tier. You know what I mean? Like he's a guy that you can count on. And like, he can be a shutdown corner at times, but he's not a guy who's like, yeah, line him up on Julio Jones and like, he's got him all game.
Yeah.
He's not that guy.
Yeah.
He's more of a, how Josh Norman played for Carolina rather than how he played for Washington.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how I see him. Because I thought Josh Norman was overrated with Carolina to begin with.
Yeah.
But he did his job really well.
He did it really well. And he got paid for it.
Yep.
And now Washington's paying for it.
Exactly. Like they tend to do.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
They like to go get them a marquee name.
I think they're probably still paying Albert Haynesworth. But that's another story.
I'm sure that they are. I mean, they basically gave him to the Patriots for a nickel.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah. So, last question.
Mm-hmm.
As we look forward to the new season, I think that there was a lot of really exciting rookie play this year.
Yeah.
I think we're coming off, like, what, 2 years ago, we had... Or maybe it was 3 years ago. Like, there wasn't a single rookie that really made a dent in the NFL. And then a couple years ago, we kind of got, what, Teddy, you know, how well he played.
That's right. Yep.
And not a lot of much else. And then this year was kind of like the year of the rookie.
I agree.
So the first question I have to you before I segue into what I was going to ask is, do you think that Dak deserved the rookie of the year over
not
Elliott?
Not even close, no.
I know. Like, does that not shock the crap out of you?
I mean,
what?
Listen, I thought Tom Brady deserved the MVP over Matt Ryan, but I at least could understand the thinking of the four games, and I could understand that Matt Ryan did play really good this year.
Well, and he took a team that usually is here to here, whereas right. Brady took a team that's usually here
to here. Just slightly above, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
And congratulations, fans at home that got to see my...
Exactly.
In-air bar markings.
Yeah. So I thought, yeah, you know, he was... He was 11-1, Tom Brady was, and, like, was outrageously good. The touchdown-interception ratio was, I believe, the best mark ever. It was, like, something... Or not the best mark ever. Wait, no, it was. Because it beat out... what's his face? Who played for the Eagles. Nick Foles.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. He beat his touchdown-interception ratio. So, I mean, I just couldn't... I thought that locked him in as the MVP, but also kind of figured they wouldn't give it to him.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not that upset with Matt Ryan getting it, because to be fair, he was great. He was great this year. But the Rookie of the Year award was not even close. It was runaway Ezekiel Elliott.
I really thought that it was.
And
when I saw the announcement, I was like, man, these guys love quarterbacks.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Because
he was not a better quarterback than Ezekiel Elliott was a running back. He was the second best offensive player on his own team.
Right.
Like, he was the second best rookie on his own team.
Yeah, he wasn't even the offensive rookie of the year for the Cowboys.
Right. And that's, again, not to take anything away from Dak, because he was, if you take Ezekiel Elliott out of the conversation, he was the Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that... I think the gap between, I feel like the gap between Zeke and Dak was sizable.
I thought so too.
I feel like the gap between Dak and number three is probably even greater.
Yeah. I can't think of anybody who would have been really in the conversation. Like, truly of like, oh yeah, that's...
Honestly, like, it was even less of a case than, like, the Heisman was. Because, you know, like, everybody... At the end, when Louisville was kind of falling apart and Lamar wasn't playing as great, they were looking for somebody to vote for just because they didn't want to give it to Lamar anymore.
Right.
Like, I mean, it was clearly a two-horse race all year.
Yeah, so. Agreed. But... All right. Dak Prescott. Okay.
Yeah, I don't agree with that at all. I really don't.
I just didn't even think it was close. I was so surprised by that one.
Yeah. It really blew me away.
But the good news is Ezekiel Elliott will probably win MVP next year.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they're so good. Like, those two guys, Dak reminds me, I don't know if I've said this or not, like, on air or what, on air, whatever, on the podcast.
Nice. I feel like you just made us some kind of pseudo-official.
Yeah. But he reminds me of a Ben Roethlisberger type player, a less athletic Cam Newton type. Mm-hmm. You know, he's in that next wave of athlete that is mobile and can play from the pocket. And
big enough to have to escape.
Exactly. Big enough to take a couple hits and you're not like, oh God, is RG3 dead?
What about Romo?
Yeah. So what about Romo is a good question.
Yeah. That's our final question, I think, before we go away.
You know, before we go Romo, just because I think that is the most interesting question. A Homer question for me. How long do you think Brady has? And two-parter of that, how long do you think he has with the Patriots? Are they the same?
So to answer your second question first, yes.
Okay.
I don't see them letting him leave unless he reaches a point where his health is at a point where he cannot be as elite.
Uh-huh.
And he's still demanding elite money. But, I would see him not being that way.
I agree, you know what I mean? That. Yeah. Now, I could... It's one of those things where most quarterbacks, they play past their point of usefulness.
Oh, yeah.
I think as soon as he sees the slip, like, he won't have that Peyton Manning year. Like, Peyton Manning had last year. Mm-hmm. I think he'll have seen the slips from the year before. When, like, even at... Because even the year before, that wasn't that his, like... Oh, that was his injury year. It was 2 years before that when he set the record.
Mm-hmm.
Like, once he saw, like, oh, man, he is, like, I'm slipping a little bit. I'm not going out there and being not the greatest quarterback.
See, but he's gone out there and he's really improved his body, too, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, late in his career.
I think we might have talked about this even on the podcast. Like, a lot of times quarterbacks are getting to the older stage.
Mm-hmm. They just don't want to work as hard.
Yeah.
And you can't blame them.
I like Brett Favre, like, guys, look. I can still throw the ball a little bit. You think you might want to bring me in like the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl, Atlanta? Yeah. I'll get you some touchdowns.
Right. That's the kind
of, or some interceptions. Either way, the game's going to be sealed.
That's the way Brett Favre. I don't play
for overtime.
Yeah, like maybe his last 4 years, that was Brett Favre. Maybe longer than that. His last 5 years, he was like, man, I'm not coming to any of the preseason stuff. I'll show up.
It's like game I'm not one. Showing up to camp.
I'm showing up week one.
I'll meet you at the stadium. Like, you guys coming in the bus, I'll ride the bus back with you.
But, yeah.
Like, I'm not starting anything earlier than I have to.
Mm-hmm.
He's out there like, are you going to stretch? No.
I got it.
I got this.
I stretched last year.
I'll stretch when I'm dead.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Tom Brady's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
And he's like, I want every day of practice. Can we get some more days of practice? I'm going to work out. Yeah. I'll change my diet to make sure that, like, I'm running at peak efficiency. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He even has a whole business around it now where, like, they even do, like, diets and stuff with his TB12 company. Like, mm-hmm. I think that probably sealed that. I agree that he will leave from the Patriots the same time he leaves from the league.
Yeah.
He'll retire.
My initial reaction is 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing is, every time I say 2 to 3 years, I'm always like, two? That's not enough.
Yeah.
It's like, it just feels like three is the number for mm-hmm. me. But and it's the conspiracy theory. It's the sum of the digits on his jersey.
Oh my god.
No, I'm just kidding.
Like, but it's always been the sum of the digits on his jersey.
Well, no, but before he was going to play for 12 years. Now, then he's going to play for 12 plus 3.
Conspiracy.
I'm telling you. Those numbers on his jersey are not deflated.
That's right.
Too soon. No, for some reason, I feel like 3 years is the number that just keeps coming into my head. I feel like the way that he looked this year, I see nothing other than a really bad injury next year. That he won't look almost the same.
Yeah, because if there's a bad injury, that changes the game.
Oh, yeah.
But assuming...
And even a bad injury, I'm talking like...
Season-ender, like...
Yeah, like...
Full year.
The... You know, God forbid we go into like the broken legs that we had a couple guys hit in week 16. But
yeah,
like the drive the shoulder into the ground, like separate shoulder, break collarbone kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can see him and I'm like, this is stupid.
Yeah,
I'm not doing this.
Uh-huh.
But outside of something like that, you know, just nagging thing, like, if it nags all year, like if it's one of those turf toe in the preseason, my freaking toe is still bothering me in Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Oh my God, this is annoying. I could see him being like,
I'm done.
I've had a good career.
Yeah.
But I don't see any reason why next year won't be a repeat of this year for him, like, performance-wise.
Right.
Like, in his health, like, just the shape that he's got himself in. I feel like the year after that is when you'll start to see the chinks in the armor.
Yeah.
And then I feel like the year after that is going to be the farewell tour. Like, I feel like he will have announced, like, before the season, like, like Brady or Manny even did, to be like, this is going to be my last hurrah.
Yeah.
You know, shaking hands with everybody in all the stadiums. Mm-hmm. Everybody's, you know, thanks. It was a great career. It was nice to play with you kind of thing.
I could see that. He could wind up being one of those guys like Kobe. If he did something like that, he could wind up being the kind of guy like Kobe where it's like, we hated you forever. But, I mean, come on. It's your last year. And, I mean, you were great. Okay, we get we will finally give in and say that you're great and okay.
Yeah.
We'll give you some ovations and stuff.
So before we get to the Romo topic,
okay.
The other question that I had about rookies is, are there any guys coming out of college this year that you're super excited to see what they can do in the NFL? Anybody jump out at you?
I know it's the flashy name, but I really am excited about Deshaun Watson.
Do you think he's going to end up in Buffalo? That seems to be the trendy pick right now.
I don't think he'll end up in Buffalo. I think he'll end up in San Francisco.
I think that's it'd be a wiser pick than Trubisky. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Everybody's so high on Trubisky. Like, Trubisky just screams, first off, dog treat, but I don't know why.
Yeah.
But, like, there's just nothing about him, to me, that has wowed me to the point that I don't feel like I'm looking at Jared Goff or...
Yeah.
You know, insert other random first round quarterback there.
I agree. I think
flash in the pan, Blake
Bortles.
I think
for sure Deshaun Watson's the first quarterback off the board. I think the question is where. I think it'll be the first round. Second pick is probably a reach. However, getting a franchise quarterback, which I do think he can be. Mm-hmm. I don't know he can be. Like, it's kind of the difference between how we felt about Andrew Luck and, like, regardless of how the Colts' woes have been as of late, I think it's been pretty obvious that hasn't been Andrew Luck's fault.
Yeah.
I think Deshaun Watson definitely, he's not that like where, okay, he's definitely going to be, but he is close to it. He's more like Teddy Bridgewater, kind of like, I feel pretty strongly he's going to be a solid quarterback.
I do too.
And has a pretty high ceiling as well. Yeah. Like a high floor and high ceiling.
Yeah.
I think
and
I think
he
that's
is mobile
at.
As well, which helps.
Mm-hmm. And he's a bit bigger.
But he's not a run first guy.
No, all. Not at all.
So, and the other thing about him to me, that I've always been impressed with is that, like, sometimes you'll see him make bonehead throws. You're like, why would, like, the number of times that they turn the ball over in the red zone was just insane.
Yes.
But he brings your team back. Like, that doesn't hinder him. And it's funny because that's sort of what we talked about with Dak in the preseason this year.
Yes.
We were like, you know what, for some reason, I think he might be all right because the moment doesn't seem too big for him.
That's exactly
like, it. He seems like he's holding his own. And that, I mean, the way that he had to come back against Alabama after.
And let's be real, Alabama, like, their defense Alabama is better than a lot of NFL essentially defenses.
An NFL light team. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Agree.
Like, maybe the offensive playmakers. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say particularly, you're not looking at Alabama's quarterback situation and going like, that's a NFL producing quarterback situation. Nope. But that's an NFL offensive line. Mm-hmm. That's an NFL defensive front.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you're just talking about guys needing another year or two with a next level coach.
Yeah.
To get them into even more specific scenarios.
Exactly.
You know, but I mean, that was an impressive win. I mean, mm-hmm. especially that comeback at the end.
Yeah.
That
what a year of comebacks.
Oh, they're
going to what a year of comebacks. This, like, yeah. I mean, I consider this part of like the 2016 year, you right. know, these two games, mm-hmm. like the Super Bowl and the college championship, because they were really based off the 2016 season.
Right, right.
What a year. I mean, you start with the Cavs coming back down 3-1. You get the Cubs over the Indians.
Mm-hmm.
Clemson. Patriots.
This is definitely the year of the championship comeback.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was nuts. I feel like there was another one that I'm forgetting, but I can't think of what it must have been. I feel like I'm missing something, but in any case, that's enough.
Yeah, yeah.
That's more than enough. So
I'm trying to remember what happened in basketball, because it's so long. Because like we're almost to the point of talking tournament time again now. Mm-hmm. God, who even won?
I don't. Was it Villanova?
Oh, that's right. It was. They didn't come back. But
no, but still.
It was like, well, Carolina hit a three with like 8 seconds left to tie it, and Villanova hit a three. Yeah. As time expired to win it.
So
that was exciting.
Yeah, yeah. But in any case, yeah. Who do you have for NFL rookie? Who do you think? Is there a back out there or anything? Or a wide receiver that you think is like ready?
This is
going to
be Leonard Fournette's rookie year in the NFL. And
I just don't know how much faith I have in him.
Especially watching the games that he struggled in the most against yeah. the big defenses.
It's I like, agree.
You know, a lot of guys look great in college when they're up against a defense that consists of 20% NFL players, 80% mm-hmm. non-NFL players. I mean, Alabama really made him look bad.
Yeah.
And I know that was the entire offense.
Yes.
And the other problem is that he also is the entire offense. So, right. Like, there's not exactly a lot of down the field games.
Yeah, but still, like, you didn't watch him. He didn't remind me at all of like the kind of dominance I saw from watching Adrian Peterson as a college player. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, however many years ago that was, where I saw him as a college player and was like, oh, that's an NFL star.
Yeah.
Or Ezekiel Elliott when you saw him play. And mm-hmm. I was like, I think that's an NFL star too. Like, and he's like a modern NFL player of like, he has the pass catching and everything else like that. Fournette just seems like, I mean, I don't think he's going to be bad, but I think his ceiling might be like LeGarrette Blount, which, by the way, is great. He led the league in NFL rushing touchdowns this year. Mm. It's not like that's bad, but I think that's like the high, you know, of like yeah. not being a top level running back, but being like maybe near the top of the second tier of running backs.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So then the other big back is Dalvin Cook from Florida State. And, you know, a lot of the rumor mill is that at least one of those guys won't make it past Indy.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see if one of those guys truly can be an elite running back in the NFL like people think that they might be.
Uh-huh.
What that'll do for Indy to finally have a running back.
I mean, it would be huge.
Running back is the Indianapolis has hit and missed a running back a lot since Edgerrin James.
Indianapolis needs to Scoot close, Indianapolis. Get an offensive line.
Boom.
Protect your guy. That's it. I mean, listen. The Colts, from their heyday with Peyton Manning, they weren't anything particularly special on defense usually, but they protected Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
And that's why they were always in it. Always in it. If you just protect Andrew Luck, he's going to make your playmakers look better. Because he can, I mean, he can throw like no one. Name a guy, he can throw just as well as them, you know. Like, Andrew Luck is as talented as they come. And he's a big guy. He can run when he needs to. He can be elusive, like more elusive than like even Aaron Rodgers and Ben Roethlisberger can be. Like, he's that kind of talent, and you can't protect him. Like, don't draft a running back. draft some linemen. But anyway, continue.
Yeah. So that leads us to, I think, what's probably going to be the biggest burning offseason question. And, of course, depending upon how it goes,
mm-hmm.
it could trickle well over into the preseason, into yep. the season. Where is Tony Romo going to be?
Dude, it is... The crazy thing about Tony Romo is if he can stay healthy, and that's just such a big if, but if he can stay healthy, he can take any of your Denver Broncos, your Houston Texans... trying to think of another team that's on the cusp like that. Who would we have? I'm trying to think of someone who could really needs it that's close. I mean, the Dolphins even.
What about the Vikings if Teddy can't come back?
The Vikings.
They're already saying Teddy's going to miss this entire season as well.
Yeah. The Vikings or...
I know there was a lot of talk about the Cardinals if Palmer didn't come back, but now the Palmer's announced.
Right.
And that might have been, like, the spot.
That would have been the spot.
You know, because, like, remember that at the time where... It was funny because all San Francisco players left and went to Dallas. Mm-hmm. And all Dallas players left and went to Phoenix.
Yeah.
So now they're not Phoenix anymore, but, you know, like...
But still. But, yeah, maybe even the Rams. Like, the Rams have such a bevy of talent that they could be, like, in that division...
Well, here's the funny
in
thing.
In a slumping Seattle, like a Seattle that's coming down to earth and no one else. Like,
but if we're going to talk about a team with potential for boom or bust, like if we're going to say, look, Tony, we have this young talent here that we want you to run with because we think they can grow up in a hurry.
Yeah.
And maybe you can contend for a playoff spot. The Rams or the Jaguars?
Now, the Jaguars would be it, but I don't think they're giving up on Blake Bortles.
I don't know. We're talking about...
I mean, I think if you're making the choice, at least short term, definitely go with Romo. But I just don't know that they're going to make that choice. I feel like they won't.
I feel like Tony wouldn't, but...
That's also true, too.
The other part that goes into this is there's two big important things for Dallas. Is that first and foremost, they arguably have... great trade leverage because they have themselves a legitimate starting quarterback in the NFL who's proven himself, who has had a year to sit and be healthy.
Yeah.
Like, let's face it. Like,
that's true.
We're not talking about a guy that's just coming off of an injury now. We're talking about a guy that, you know, got hurt, got better.
Yeah.
And
he's basically going to get a massive training camp, like a preseason, like to get himself in the best shape he's probably ever going to be in again.
Right.
Probably will have the best chance at staying healthy for a full year that he'll ever have again.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. This is probably...
But on top of them having that leverage with him not being coming immediately off of an injury, there's the problem of his contract.
Yes.
Like, it's a very hard contract to trade because of the money involved in it.
I totally agree. So
that just leaves people to go down the road of, like, do we pull the trigger on a deal for what might set our franchise back a couple of years financially if he doesn't work?
Right.
Or do we wait and gamble on trying to win the waiver wire war if they cut him? Because if they cut him after the, was it June 1st deadline or whatever,
then
they save so many millions in dead money because they can roll like $8 million over to next year or something like that. You know, that whole thing about you have to cut him before a certain day or on a certain day or whatever. And
I think, because...
It's like if they wait long enough, then they lose some of that trade, they lose all the trade leverage if they wait too long.
Yeah.
Because then they can cut him and save money, but then they get nothing for him.
In the NFL, do they have the options to be able to like have the team... The trading team, like the team they're coming from, to be able to eat some of that salary? Is that a thing in the NFL? Because I know I've heard of NBA teams doing that.
Not sure, honestly. I would assume that in the day and age of contracts, you can contract it out to be whatever.
Right, because I would think if I am a team like the Cowboys, knowing, okay, here's the point where we'd have to eat this much money if we release them. Maybe we can... eat a little less and trade them, but still eat like enough to make it valuable to another team. Like, because I'll tell you right now, if you throw him on the Denver Broncos. They're suddenly the favorite in the division. In the best division in football, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue that they're the AFC favorite.
Yeah. They would be
at least... talking about an elite defense. I mean...
Right.
Barring them losing some pieces. I'm not exactly sure who all's up for free agency in Denver.
True. Yeah, I'm not sure
either. But barring them losing any major pieces, defensively, they're still top three in the league.
Yeah.
And... that puts them... I mean, because you're talking about a team that still has Demaryius Thomas.
Exactly. And Emmanuel Sanders.
You're talking about two great receivers.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue that they would suddenly be the favorite in the AFC.
Yeah.
With Pittsburgh, probably.
Yeah. Because Pittsburgh is already...
the weapon-wise...
they're so explosive. They're yeah. just... I mean...
You're talking about defenses versus offense.
Exactly.
With the other side of the ball being, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, number 10 in the league for both of them. So.
Yeah. Denver needs to do one of two things. Fix their quarterback situation or get an elite running back. If they do one of those two things, they can become the favorites. Because if they have an elite running game, then their defense is going... like, they can eat up time on offense and choke out the opposing team on defense.
Because this is the other question that I have for you. Because I think that in the grand scheme of things, because we're talking about leading up to... the off-season activities.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think Dallas want for Romo in a trade?
If I'm Dallas,
I mean,
the thing that I would want...
Are you going to demand a one?
No. I don't think so. I think for them, they know they're going to have to eat some on this. One way or another, they're going to... And because the contract situation is so unfavorable... I don't think they could afford... I don't think another team could afford to have it be a draft pick. I think it has to be some players. Just to knock down some salary.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, maybe... pick one of the two Broncos quarterbacks that they kept going back and forth between Paxton Lynch and... what's the other guy's name?
Trevor Siemian.
Yeah, and Trevor Siemian. Ship one of them with them. I mean, because really, they're about the same. Like, do you really care which one you have?
Either one of them could beat out Mark Sanchez for the backup job.
Exactly.
In Dallas.
So, again.
Again, I might, yeah.
Yeah. So, either way, like,
right,
you feel fine, like, with either of those two quarterbacks for both teams. Like, you're like, yeah, they're about the same. Whichever Denver would prefer to keep, take the other one. You know, I think they'd probably do that. I think they'd be fine with that, and then they'd probably have to trade somebody, like some veteran, with like a decent sized contract that might be a little overrated. Like, I can't think of anybody who that might be off the top of my head, but there's always somebody, like, on your books who you're like, this isn't panning out,
or
like,
maybe not even that's not panning out. Maybe it's just a guy that's a little bit older. You feel like it's a position that you can replace, so you're like,
right
here, like maybe they give like Siemian and maybe like Lewis Harris,
yeah.
Like, you know, like a really solid Pro Bowl tandem kind of corner.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you're getting a starting quarterback.
Yeah.
You're willing to buy it.
I think so.
Because you've got pretty good pass rushers.
I think of all the situations, the Broncos is the best situation for both the team that would be receiving Romo and for Romo.
Yeah.
The Cowboys, they're going to be the losers on this in any way it comes out to be.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I feel like if they keep Romo, like, they're doing even a worse job. Because,
yeah,
like, first of all, they're preventing the guy
who's
really...
like a $7 million backup quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, what are you doing? And he's done enough for your organization that, like, you kind of feel
he deserves
like he deserves a chance.
Yeah, to play here or play somewhere else.
Yeah.
And
he's
not
going to
play here.
So, yeah. So, I think that's...
Jinx! No. So, the funny thing is, because the other teams that, like, need a quarterback, but you just think, like, there's no way he'd go there. Because you just have to think that if it's not a trade, because I have no idea if he has any kind of no-trade clause that he'd have to waive.
Right.
I have no idea.
But I feel like they'd treat him right in a trade anyway.
I think they probably would. The other teams that are out there that could stake a claim, you have Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
Buffalo could be a Romo away from being a really solid
team. It could be. They unfortunately still play in the division with the Patriots, which is the trouble.
Which leads to the Jets,
mm-hmm.
which I think is a less settled situation.
Agreed.
The Browns, the most unsettled situation.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's that whole, what do we do about Bortles or Goff and LA and Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. Like, so those are the two. They haven't been good. They seem like they've got a young talent. Maybe we could do something with them.
Right.
The Cleveland, you literally just traded me to the worst team in the league so that I could end my career later. Like,
yeah.
Really?
In my career as a Brown? Are you serious? Thanks. Thanks, Jerry.
Yeah.
Jerk.
Well, because you know the funny thing is, because everyone said, like, we've got to figure out what to do with this trading chip. And Jerry Jones was like, I like him. He won't keep him here. He's going to be on the bench. I don't know what kind of accent that is that he's got, but...
Not a bad Jerry Jones. He's got an awful accent himself.
Like, yeah, I'm half McConaughey. All right. No. But it's just sad because we're talking about two different spectrums. Like, we were just getting off of the Brady conversation where Phil's like, he's going to ride it out well. And then there's Romo that's like, it might end the worst way possible for him.
Yeah. If Romo's going to come back, which every report I'm hearing, every player that they've talked to, like from Dallas, seems to indicate, yeah, Tony's coming back. I think he has a max shelf life of 2 years. I think Tony Romo has, and likely a shelf life of one.
Yeah. You're looking for a flash. This is going for Romo this year is obviously a different situation than what happened mm-hmm. with Favre and Rodgers.
Yes.
But it's kind of similar.
Yeah.
But I feel like you're looking for 1 year, your best shot.
Yeah.
We're going to win with this guy.
Yeah, you're like the Vikings year that Favre had. That's what you're thinking of.
Like,
Vikings could be like, we've done this before. We can do it again.
The thing is, like, we obviously still have to worry about Teddy's health.
Yes.
But I think that we definitely saw Teddy growing and looking really good.
Mm-hmm.
They feel like they have something great there with him, potentially building up.
And
like 1 year, because you know that he's not going to play anyways. You still got Bradford to back him up.
And you know what? If you get Romo for 2 years, he could also be the bridge to Teddy. Like, to get Teddy back and be like a really good mentor. And I think that if Romo got one more shot, the next year he would be fine with that kind of a mentor role.
Oh, yeah.
His demeanor seems like he's like that kind of a guy. Like,
yeah.
He can accept that.
I think that's the other thing that's made him, as much as we're kind of annoyed by the Dallas Cowboys quarterbacks.
Right.
Because there's this stupid prestige that gets attached to them because they've declared themselves America's team.
Uh-huh.
But, like, he's the one that you have the least problem with because,
mm-hmm.
you know, while we did have the fling with Jessica Simpson.
Yeah.
That was, like, odd news for a year or two. In general, he seems like a humble guy.
He does.
Like, he doesn't rub you, like...
He seems like a worker.
He seems like Aikman. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
For as much as we know Aikman's a Hall of Famer and Romo is question mark.
I know. It's really only
It's so hard to health. Judge his career. Yeah.
If it wasn't for his health, if he strung together the kind of seasons we expect that he would have, I think he'd be a lock Hall of Famer.
I think that it's very arguable that he would be.
So if he got 1 year, 1 year of like, of just go for it. Even if he didn't win the Super Bowl, even if it like it was like one of those heartbreaking fashions like Brett Favre got like with the Vikings and get to the NFC Championship and it
throw that
just,
pick.
Was just that close, I think people would be like, you gotta give it to him now.
That's what we wanted to see.
Yeah, we got this close. I think he is that kind of guy who could do it if he can stay healthy. But I think this is the year he could.
Yeah. The only other bad thing about Minnesota is the offensive line was not nearly as good this year.
Yeah, you have a good point there.
So,
that's a valid point.
Yeah.
That might be rough.
Yeah.
It's like, but they also had a ton of injuries, to be fair.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, their line was really good the year before.
Uh-huh.
And then with not a lot of change of personnel, not very good this year because of injuries.
Yeah.
Will they get back to it, or is that the new norm? I don't know.
That's a good question.
That does make you go, let's trade for Romo.
Yeah.
Like, our left tackle's out. So, three-way trade, maybe someone else takes Romo, and we still take the other stuff?
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, exactly.
So, all in all, we're closing the book on the 2016 NFL season.
That's right. And we'll see. I'm not sure when we'll come back. There will probably be something that will make us think, okay, it's time for an episode. Yeah. Like some.
I'm sure that if nothing else, we'll probably talk about the draft.
Yeah.
But before then, who knows? We might even endangerously sport some other sports and talk about the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. Who knows?
We don't even know. We don't even know.
Boom.
I feel like right now we can actually just do like continue on for like 5 or 6 minutes like this, just talking about random things.
Just until people just like hit the skip ahead button.
Yeah, until people are like just listen to it and just see what they do. Like, what, I mean, who would actually hang on? Like, I'm curious.
That's a good question.
Who are the bigger fans of the organization that actually like our show? And,
I mean, I don't know that I'm that big of a fan enough to
what's really
keep listening.
I know. See, what's really funny is that people probably think that I'm fading out. Like, we're actually
fading the show out, but we're not.
Actually, our whispering is not actually fading out at all. We are whispering.
Compared to this.
Not this.
Right.
So, if you haven't figured it out yet, we really don't have a way to end the show very often. So, we usually just kind of talk until you stop listening. So if you want to go about your day now, go fix that pot of coffee you're waiting on.
Exactly.
Dinner. Yesterday was National Pizza Day. Did you partake?
I did not.
I didn't either. I feel like an un-American for not participating in that.
I feel disappointed in us.
I know. It's very un-American.
DangerouslyCreative.com